Call the Senate Tax Committee to order. Members, the first bill up is Senator Frederickson, Senate File 2781. Senator Frederickson, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Mr. Chairman, good morning, members. Good morning. Senate File 2781 would authorize the City of Marshall to institute an additional half-cent sales tax and also a lodging tax and a food and beverage tax. And, Mr. Chairman, members, the City of Marshall is the regional center in southwest Minnesota. You have to travel to Mankato or St. Cloud, some 125 or more miles away, to come to a larger city, so a significantly larger city at least. So the City of Marshall is the regional center for southwest Minnesota. And as a regional center, they provide additional services to the whole region. They get designated as the regional hub for a number of activities. And two of those activities are, number one, a facility called the Merit Center. It is a Tier 2 emergency training facility that provides training for fire and police and others from an area of about 28 counties. They are also the site for the Amateur Sports Commission Southwest Regional Facility. So for a city of 13,000 to expect their property taxpayers to support these regional facilities becomes very difficult. So that's why this bill is before you, to allow the City of Marshall to add the additional half-cent sales tax to help support those regional facilities. Mr. Chairman, I have two gentlemen with me from Marshall to help further explain what they would do with the additional taxes. And we also have several other people from the Marshall community here in support. I'd like to note that they got up about 2:30 this morning to be here by 8:30 this morning. But they're here bright-eyed and ready to inform you about what they plan to do. So I'll turn first to Mr. Ben Martick from the city.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Martick, City Administrator of Marshall, and members of the committee. Again, as the Senator Frederickson had indicated, we're looking for your support of the sales tax authorization to bring to the voters of Marshall to consider these two important capital projects for our community and region. Marshall is a regional center for employment, activity, and commerce. We double our daytime population, and we estimate that about 40% of the sales generated in Marshall come from outside of the community, with probably a labor shed and retail trade area of about 40 to 50 miles. The project specifically that we're looking at supporting both have state involvement through either a commission or special designations. The first is the Regional Public Safety Training Center based in Marshall. It's a Tier 2 designation by the state of Minnesota. We have received $1 million for our project for the driving track expansion through the bonding bill that's been authorized through the state of Minnesota legislature and approved by the governor. The other project is the Amateur Sports Center expansion in Marshall. We do have support from the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission for this project. We did not receive any bonding for this project, but I would like to move forward with these projects combined with this funding authorization that we would have. If not for this funding, the projects will not move forward as proposed. The amateur sports project includes a two-sheet hockey arena with flexibility for expansion for other multiple uses. This project in particular is really about economic development and not about recreation, although that's the key of it. We do look at this as a stimulus. Marshall has been very successful as a regional amateur sports center to attract people to our community from the Dakotas, in Iowa, and as far away as Nebraska. Four different opportunities. This allows us to move it to the next stage and continue to grow as an amateur sports center, bringing money into Marshall as well as to the state of Minnesota. We do have included with your information letters of support from a number of businesses in the community. The Chamber of Commerce has supported this project, is included with the resolution of support, as well as some significant regional community partners. I would like to briefly introduce the people here today before I turn it over who have come a long ways with us to Marshall out of their time. Mr. Stan Brewers, who is in the private sector, and he's the chairman of the public safety center that we have, that we're proposing. We have Daryl Bartholomew with MinWest, Minnesota. Minsky was involved as they are are housed in the Emerit Center and do the customized training at the facility. We partner with them, and we'll be looking for their involvement in this expansion as well as we move forward. We have Rob Yant, our public safety director for Marshall here, who was directly involved in that project. And then moving down the row here, we have Linda Erb with our Conventions and Visitors Bureau, who's involved in the Amateur Sports Commission and helps promote both of these projects. We have Bill McCormick, former Schwann's employee, who is involved in the Amateur Sports Commission, and Harry Weilagi with the Community Services Director with the City of Marshall. Last of all, this is my brief introduction. I thank you for your time, and I'd like to turn it over to Roger Madison with Bremer Bank. He is the Vice Chairman of the Amateur Sports Commission. He's going to give you a little bit more information on the projects. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about our projects. And I want to emphasize up front that this is an expansion of two separate activities, which has a very broad representation in the community, both in the boards that are represented here and the volunteers that work with our two organizations. And both of them, as Ben indicated, are connected to the state in a couple different ways. If you look at page 4 in this packet that you were given, you'll see that from a geographic standpoint that the Amateur Sports Commission is expanding into that southwest portion of the state to have their seventh and last site. That mimics what is being accomplished through the Merit Center also. Because of our adjacency to other states, Iowa, South Dakota, etc., we have the ability to draw into the state dollars from out of our borders. We have this is an economic development strategy for the people who are here and are representing or proposing this sales tax. What we are looking to do is follow a model that has been put together by the state of Minnesota with the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, and you can see on page 5 that it's been a very successful activity that has brought $76 million into the state as of the last numbers in 2008 and is unfunded from the state in a general subsidy fashion since they began their activities a number of years ago. What this means for Marshall is that we have an opportunity to model after something in both of these facilities. We can have a better chance for recruitment and retention by our employers and by the university, which is a significant player in our community. And it allows us to do job growth with the specific expansion of facilities that we will have in our community. If you go to really the last page of this, it echoes again something that Ben was talking about, is that Marshall today is a regional hub. And that's validated by some of the information on page 16. We, in order to survive, in order to be a strong community in Minnesota, we need the opportunity to expand into some of these activities and use them as an economic development tool. Today, it's truly regional because we bring 40% of our total sales revenue from outside Marshall. We want to continue that. This is a community that grows from around 12,000 to 25,000 on an average, on a daily basis. It's a community that supports a lot of southwest Minnesota and not just Marshall itself. So thank you for the opportunity to look at this. This is something we believe is critical for us as a community to continue to grow and continue to set ourselves apart as a regional hub, and to draw dollars in for both projects from outside of the state of Minnesota, and we ask your support.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to testify on the bill? You brought a lot of folks down. Senator Ferguson, I just have a couple of questions, and either your witnesses can answer, I guess. On the lodging tax, it says that the city council may impose it, which may include areas of the city which are not contiguous. What exactly does that mean? So apparently the lodging tax is not going to be across the entire city. There's some areas going to leave out, or what's the reason that that language is in there? Because that's a little unusual.
The intention is for it to be a citywide imposition, and I can't answer the specifics of the language. We worked with our bond counsel as well as the revisor's office on the language. The intent is to implement it citywide.
Okay, thank you. That helps. And then is there a reason? I noticed that we require voter approval for the local option sales tax, which is something we always do. But we also, in the way the bill is drafted, require the voter approval for the lodging tax and the food and beverage taxes, which is something we don't normally do. We normally just give the authority to impose those taxes to the city council. Is the chamber's condition contingent upon the voters voting on that, or is there a reason it's drafted that way?
Mr. Chairman, from the beginning, the committee has felt that the two taxes are tied together and felt it was important to get community support through the vote of both of the items. So that's the intention of the bill. It's been proposed by both organizations from the beginning, and I don't know if Roger has anything to add to that, but we feel confident that there's community support, and both of those are being tied together on the approvals.
The problem it creates for us is we haven't normally required a voter approval on food and beverage or lodging, and it kind of sets a new precedence when other communities want to come here. We've kind of set a different set of rules for one community versus another. Is there a problem if we took the voter approval out for the lodging and the food and beverage?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there would be a problem. I think the city council, even if this isn't in here, the city council will make sure they have the support of the community before they would impose that, even if it doesn't require a vote in this law, in this legislation.
The vote on the local option will give you an idea whether you've got the support or not, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if that would be the intention of the committee to move it forward that way, the procedure we would do then is we would have the election on the first and then no action until the election to implement the half cent. So we'd probably follow that, even if it wasn't specifically written that way.
And then do you anticipate, I notice on the lodging and the food and beverage, there's some permissive language in to allow for some of that money to be able to use to pay operating costs, so all the money is not going for debt service. Is that something you need to have?
The clarification is that the sales tax would be used specifically for the construction and capital costs. The lodging and beverage tax would be used for operating to get us to the point where this facility is where it's independent.
And so the anticipation is by the time the bonds are paid off, that you wouldn't then need the operating money either from food and beverage and lodging, that it would stand on its own?
Correct.
Any other questions, members? Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, maybe you have know the answer. I thought we had a moratorium on these local sales taxes.
I think until next fall.
Next fall.
I think.
Mr. Chairman, the moratorium, I believe, is in place until May. It's our interpretation of our bond council that because it's coming, the sunset's coming off in May, that we would hold the vote after that point in time, and so we felt it was timely to come to the legislature now to request this. And so that was our interpretation of the law and moving this ahead.
Thank you.
I don't have a number here of how much money the food and beverage tax would raise or the lodging tax would raise. Do we know kind of roughly what they would raise to help cover your operating costs?
The 1.5% would raise approximately $400,000 per year.
In the lodging?
In the lodging piece.
And on food and beverage?
Together, combined.
Together?
To create that, yes.
And what do you anticipate the annual operating costs are going to be?
We are working with the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission to help define that. We don't have a set design for the facility yet. We're in the pre-design phase. And the work we're doing with Paul Erickson and his crew will help us to get a better handle on that number. What we don't use for actual operating costs, we will use for promotion to bring in tournaments and activities into the facility.
Session. we may, I think if you want to use some of that money for promotion, we probably need to reference that in the language. That probably doesn't fit just under operating costs. So,
okay.
But that's the intent, to allow some for marketing.
Yes.
And Mr. Chairman, will you amend the bill to?
Yeah, okay. Senator Fredrickson, when a community comes in and is in support of the city council and support of the business community, I mean, I like to try and accommodate those communities when they've got broad support like that. I'm a little uncertain how the House is going to respond. They've been not that supportive of local option sales taxes, so we'll do our best here. But I would suggest that you've got broad support in the community that you spend some time over on the House side and see if you can build some support over there, because we've had as many as 14 local option sales taxes in the Senate bill from time to time over the years, and came away in conference committee with one or less, because they've been reluctant to go down that road. So let me just suggest to all of you advocates from your community to spend some time over on the House side and try to help us some. Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, about 10 years ago, I was before this committee with a similar proposal for the city of New Ulm. And this committee approved it. The Senate approved it. It took a little while to get the House to go along with it that year, but ultimately they did. And it made a big difference in the city of New Ulm for the facilities that were available to the region, also for local citizens, for amateur athletics, for senior citizens, for community groups. It was really a good thing to do. Ultimately, the voters of New Ulm passed the excess referendum with almost 70% of the vote. And I feel quite confident the same thing would happen to Marshall. You know, it'd be a big enhancement for the city of Marshall and also the whole region.
Okay. Senator Fredrickson, thank you. And to the extent, I'll say it again, to the extent some of you people from the community can help us over in the other body, that would, I think, make our job a little easier, and maybe we'd be a little successful a little sooner than taking a number of years, Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, we'll do our best, and thank you very much for hearing our bill. Thank you, members.
Senator Fredrickson, thank you, and thank you, all of you from the community of Marshall, for coming down.
Thank you.
Chair Lee's over Senate file 2781 for possible inclusion in the committee bill. Senator Dill.
So we got to fix this thing up. If under these, maybe we should just give them permissive language to run up if they want. For the food and beverage. And then if they want to, they can not require it. Right, if not required.
Senator Dill, welcome to the Tax Committee. Senate file 2724 is in front of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate file 2724 authorizes a half-cent sales tax for the city of Hutchinson to be used for servicing the debt on a wastewater treatment plant and a drinking water treatment facility. And I'm going to just go through the bill here first, and then I've got the mayor of Hutchinson, Steve Cook, with me on my left. And on my right, I've got Jeremy Carter, who is the city finance director. And we also have the city engineer, Ken Exner, here. But the mayor will be presenting most of the information. But just to go through the bill to start with, Mr. Chairman, members, on page 1, line 1.7, is the language that allows the subject to voter approval allows the city of Hutchinson to impose by ordinance a sales or use tax of up to 0.5% for the purposes specified in subdivision 2. So that's one tax. The second one down on line 1.14 is an excise tax allowing the city of Hutchinson by ordinance to impose a fee of up to $20 per motor vehicle sold on all the motor vehicles sold at retail within the city. And the subdivision 3 identifies the use of these revenues And as I mentioned earlier, the revenue received will be used for covering the cost to finance a new water treatment facility and renovating the wastewater treatment facility in the city of Hutchinson. And then on page 2, it identifies the way in which the tax will be terminated. And it'll be terminated 20 years after the date of initial imposition of the tax, or when the city of Hutchinson determines the amount of revenues raised is sufficient to pay for the costs identified under subdivision 3. If there's any money left over, that money can be put into the general fund. So that's what the bill says, and now I'm going to let the mayor make the case for the need for this additional different type of revenue to service the debt on these two facilities.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Steve Cook, Mayor of Hutchinson. And back in 2007, the city brought online a new water plant, and in 2008, an upgrade to our existing wastewater plant was completed. Both projects were initiated for a variety of reasons. One was to meet the tightening environmental regulations. We had a wastewater plant permit that was being renewed at the time, and we had to meet stronger regulations in phosphorus and BOD, among other things. And on the water side, there were tightening regulations on copper hardness and some other standards as well. It was also done to support the needs of our local industries. Both projects were done in consultation with our major industries and looking at their future needs and the forecasts. And then we are also coming up against some of the various limits and that we had to adjust for. We were doing things temporarily just to try to get by, but we needed a long-term solution for those. We also wanted to improve the water quality and then to support future growth of the community. We are coming up to capacity issues at certain times of the year, and those were becoming more frequent. So the problem then is really that the combined outstanding debt for both of the plants combined is $28 million still. Due to the recent economic downturn and conservation efforts that have ensued because of that, the water and wastewater usage is down significantly. Just on the industrial side alone, it's down over 40%. So this really impacts the rates and the revenues that can come back in to help pay for that. There's also been a change in the loading on the wastewater side, what materials come to the wastewater plant itself, and that also impacts revenues. During this time, we also had local business changes in our industries. We had one industry, major industry, lay off a lot of people, shift some of their production facilities to another plant that they have outside of the state. So this is really going to be a long-term issue that we're facing here and with the revenue shortfall that we're seeing. Actions that we've already taken, we've raised rates as part of this project. We knew that rates were going to have to be raised, you know, to help pay for this, so some of that has already been done. We did seek a federal appropriation for our wastewater plant, but that was unsuccessful. We've already restructured our debt. Reserves have been drawn down. We've laid off employees, and our operating costs have been reduced over $1 million a year. And we also raised residential and commercial rates for 2010 again. Really, what the sales tax does for us is it helps to stabilize our rates so we don't have to keep raising the rates to help pay for the debt. Without the sales tax, we'll have to raise rates an average of 5% per year just to cover cash flow of basic operations. However, doing surveys of comparable cities, our rates are already among the highest of those cities, so we don't want to have to raise rates even higher. The revenue will also help us replenish and maintain adequate reserves for the bonding standards. Right now, our reserves are about 1 year of the debt payment, and that's really the minimum reserves that we should have. And then finally, it'll help us set aside money for future replacement and renewal of equipment and infrastructure, meeting the depreciation standards. Right now, we're not setting aside any money for depreciation. And what this also impacts is on some of our street improvement projects. Typically, we'll bond or take revenues from the Water and Sewer Department to help pay for their part of those upgrades. But with less reserves in those funds, we have to take more of our bonding capacity, and that way we have less money to do for street projects. This is really about a regional benefit. It's about jobs, because we're really trying to retain our existing jobs and attract new industries and their jobs. Hutchinson's a regional center, and we provide employment to a lot of people from around the area. For example, 3M has their largest North American manufacturing plant in Hutchinson, Hutchinson Technology. Combined, both of those, over 48% of their employees come from outside the city of Hutchinson. Due to the significant job losses in 2008 and 2009, unemployment rate in Hutchinson is currently 11.7%, McLeod County's 10.4%, neighboring counties of Meeker and Wright are 11.4 and 10.2 combined. These are all significantly higher than the state average. So we need rate stability to help retain the existing jobs that we already have and help to attract new jobs. And our local industries have other options, whether it's out of state or out of the country. For example, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, where Hutch Tech has another facility, their water and wastewater rates are about half of what ours are. So there's a competitive issue that we're trying to deal with that. And we need the rate stability to help attract new jobs. We've made significant local investment in upgrading and increasing our industrial park. The state and federal funding helped with that as well. So that property is going to be available this summer, and we hope to be able to attract new businesses with that. So the sales tax itself will provide about $1.3 million annually. About 30% of that will come from outside the community. It'll cost an average household about $80 a year, less than $7 a month. We've shown that a 5% increase just in 2 years, that 5% increase in our water rates will exceed that amount that a local homeowner would have to pay, you know, for the sales tax. Just as importantly, industrial commercial rate users will have to see those same increases and the trends, and it's pretty much a trend going up, going out in the future. So again, the sales tax will help our rates be more stable, and future rate increases will obviously be necessary at some point, but at least they'll be more manageable and be able to be controlled more. And it'll also allow our reserves to be built to a more adequate level and be able to pay for some of the depreciation. So as I said, Hutchinson, this is really about jobs. I know the legislature has jobs as one of the major emphases this year, and that's what this is really about. It's Hutchinson and the surrounding region has been struggling with the job losses, unemployment stubbornly high. Locally, our apartment vacancies are over 15%. That's a record high. We're likely to see 90 foreclosures this year, which is up from last year, which was up from the year before. Even foreclosures and short sales have made up about 30% of our local home sales. So if we're really going to start turning those numbers around, it's vital that we retain our existing jobs and attract new jobs to the community. And because of the significant regional benefit that the local jobs provide, we think that the local sales tax is both fair and reasonable. And really, it's the only real option that we have left. If we raise our levy, we'd have to raise our local levy 21% at the same time that we're losing LGA and home values are going down. So all we're asking is that we have the opportunity to take this to our voters in November. So if you have any questions.
Mayor Cook, thank you. Questions of the committee? Mayor Cook, how are we doing on the House side?
Well, we've had those conversations. As you mentioned previously, it's a little harder there. They did encourage us to work on the Senate side. And if it got...
Why am I surprised?
And if it got to the conference committee, then they can have that discussion further.
So. Any other questions, members?
But I just want to stress this is really a serious situation for us. You know, our rates have been going up a lot. And again, with some of the job losses we've already had, we've had discussions with local industries, and they're very concerned if rates would have to keep going up further. And if we had more job losses, that would be very bad for the community and the whole region itself.
Well, Mayor Cook, it's pretty obvious to see what's happened to the usage in the industrial side of your consumption. And that's impacted revenue. So, any questions, members? Senator Dill, thank you. Chair Lazelover, Senate file 2724 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Lowry still here?
Yeah, he's back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We've got Senate file 3262.
Senator Lowry, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Again, Senate file 3262, this is not a new issue for this committee. This is a Cloquet local option sales tax initiative. I think we're passing out a resolution from the city council of Cloquet. This allows the city to enable a vote of the citizens to approve a general sales and use tax of up to 0.5% and an excise tax of up to $20 per motor vehicle sold at retail within the city of Cloquet. Cloquet is a regional center and is at a fairly significant disadvantage in northeastern Minnesota, as it is surrounded by a number of cities that have been allowed over the years to institute a local option sales tax. Hermantown, Proctor, and Two Harbors has also been granted the legislative authority to hold one, and of course Duluth also has a local option sales tax. The use of these, they've worked hard to rein it in to make sure that the projects have a regional significance and that they either provide jobs or recreational opportunities for the many non-Cloquet residents utilizing Cloquet services. The tax would be limited to the need of $16.5 million or 30 years, whichever occurred first. And I've got Brian Fritzinger, the administrator of the city of Cloquet, and Dave Bjerknes, a city councilor, to talk about some of the regional significance of this proposal and some of the uses that the money would be put to.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Dave Bjerknes. I'm a city councilor with the city of Cloquet. My last name is spelled B-J-E-R-K-N-E-S-S. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you regarding our bill. For those of you who have not visited the city of Cloquet, we are a community of about 11,500 people in northeastern Minnesota. We're located 20 miles south of Duluth, and are considered a regional center in terms of services provided and job opportunities. The proposed bill grants the city the authority to impose local sales and use tax of up to 0.5%, with a maximum of $20 per motor vehicle after a voter approval under referendum. The tax is expected to raise between $500,000 and $625,000 per year, or $16,500,000 over $500,000 over a 30-year tax proposed. As many of you that may have served on this committee in the past are aware, this is not our first attempt by the City of Cloquet in the pursuing this legislation. The city continues to come back each year seeking this legislation as it struggles to provide a wide range of services and infrastructure improvements for our community. These are improvements and services that not only benefit the city of Cloquet specifically, but the broader northern Carleton and southern St. Louis County community as well. All we are asking for at this point is an opportunity for our residents to actually vote on the concept. It is difficult for our community to watch year after year. Other communities provided this authority for similar projects and purposes. Like the state, the change in our economy has significant impact on the city of Cloquet. On the revenue side, the lack of construction and building permit revenues, along with significant reductions in investment interest, have taken their toll. Further, the continued reduction in LGA has put the city at a breaking point in terms of service provisions. Should the governor's most recent unallotment be approved, the city will have lost $2.1 million in annual LGA, or 49% of our LGA since 2004. Like other cities and the state, we struggle each day finding the monies to provide the services expected by our residents. On the expense side, the continued increase in insurance premiums, natural gas, electric rates increase, and other inflationary or cost of living adjustments have compounded our problems. The city is at a disadvantage when you compare us to our neighboring communities, the city of Proctor, the city of Hermantown, Two Harbors, and Duluth. Have all previously received authority from the state to have local sales tax. The Cloquet Chamber of Commerce has once again endorsed the legislature's authorization to allow the local residents in Cloquet to vote on such a local tax. Each of us in this room is very much aware of the challenges of providing broad-based services in a world of declining revenue. We are only asking for the authorization to allow our residents the opportunity to have their voice heard. Thank you, and unless you have any specific questions, Brian Fritzinger will now address the use of the tax proceeds.
Mr. Chairman, members, again for the record, Brian Fritzinger, City Administrator with Cloquet. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here today and speak again on behalf of our bill. As Senator Lurie and Mr. Bierkness have indicated, you know, we are a regional center providing a wide variety of services to our part of the state and community. We have a number of examples of that, which we continually to have discussions within our county and our region on how those services are impacted. Run through a few of those examples and what they do for us. Library is one of the major components of a service that we provide in Cloquet that the region uses. Other communities within that area of our part of the state do not have those services. We have over 40% of the users of our library are non-Cloquet residents, documented in terms of where those come from around the region and broader state with some of the sharing that goes on. Those users don't pay any fees or any sort of local taxes for that service. You've heard me in the past when we've been here, we've talked about our ambulance fire protection and some of the bills that we've worked with the legislature on in that regards. Again, a service that we provide to an area of approximately 250 square miles, obviously much larger than our community itself, again, borne on the back of the local community in terms of taxes and the cost for those sorts of things. And kind of the broader area that we're seeing more and more pressure on in terms of that regional service, again, is the park system that we provide. Very few of the townships and the small cities around us, as well as the county itself, provide any specific athletic or recreational facilities. As a result, our parks and our programs that we offer within our parks are available to all of those communities and residents of those communities, and they are used by numerous youth and adults for those purposes. One of the unique aspects of our community, in addition, is the fact that we are one of only a handful of communities in the state that is comprised of Native American Indian Reservation. About one-third of our community resides within the Fond du Lac Indian Reservation. With that designation, no property taxes being received by the city, no cash in lieu for the services provided. Yet we are required under those federal treaties that are out there to provide the same services to all of those residents and members of the reservation as we are to those that pay taxes within our community. So it expands our challenges in terms of the financial aspect of infrastructure and services. With that in mind, the purpose of our tax, again, is really split into two different areas. The first is infrastructure and park improvements. Continue to look at ways to diversify our tax base, our economic development efforts in the community. In the past, we've been here and talked about industrial side development. And in this case, with our bill, looking at a fairly large development along the Interstate 35, I-33 corridor area that would be developed for a large-scale retail development. We've been working with a developer from Twin Cities area here on this development. But with that, there's a lot of infrastructure needs that have to go in. Changes to Highway 33, State Highway 33, in terms of frontage roads, signalization, water, sewer, stormwater, and many other issues involved in that project that have cost to the city that would be part of this bill. Depending on the final design of that project is put together, it also addresses an area of concern from a safety standpoint. We've had an area on the interchange to I-35 from Highway 33 where we've had a number of deaths over the recent years as well as serious injuries of a number of different drivers. This project and some of the improvements that are proposed in that area would eliminate and reduce those sorts of challenges that we have with the current design of the highway system in that place. When you look at the rest of the community in terms of recreation, again, being where we're at located, many tourists, regional bikers, snowmobilers visit our area each year. We completed a study this past year in terms of connectivity to the city, of our city, to the regional trail system that's available in our area for both ATV, snowmobile, and pedestrian use. A portion of the proceeds that are part of this bill would be allow us to expand and create the trails and the amenities with those trails to expand that system along the St. Louis River corridor and eventually connecting back to the state's Munger Trail system on the other side of the county. Our soccer and baseball complexes, again, serve a large part of Carlton County, and we currently can't meet the demand that we have for the growth of those kids as they use those services. The complex at both our baseball field, softball field, and our football field, our soccer fields, have also recently, over the last year, become the home for the Fond du Lac Tribal Community College, their athletic facilities that they use when the state authorized them to move forward with the provision of athletics within their system. They have no fields of their own, no athletic complex outside of the gymnasium that they have, and so they use the city system for their athletic teams. Final aspect in terms of infrastructure is just the aging issues that we have with our water, sewer, and streets. We've continued, unfortunately, to have to eliminate these improvement projects as a result of the declining economy and our LGA cuts. As we have in the past, as part of this request, would like to see proceeds of this allow us to continue to update those systems. Those systems are critical for us as a community, critical for us to encourage business growth, job creation, as well as just the people that live in our community and what services they expect when they live there. So that broad-based infrastructure needs is a significant aspect of the bill that we've put together here. One new aspect of the bill that we have this year, again, directly links back to those impacts of our budget and what's been going on with the economy. We are asking, as part of this bill, opportunity to utilize a portion of these funds for actual operations in terms of our public safety and our library because of those issues related to the broader regional needs in the area. So as part of this, looking for opportunity to use those proceeds for law enforcement, fire, EMS, and our library for those services that are used by the broader and in place in the community. So I think with that, I would wrap up. If you have any questions, we can try to answer those. Thank you.
Mr. Fitzinger, I think line 2.11, the reference to using it for general fund expenses is probably going to be a stretch. I understand the ask.
Yes.
I understand the state's commitment to local governments through the reductions in aids and credits are putting a lot of stress on, but I think this committee is probably reluctant to go down that road, and I think the conference committee probably even less. But I notice you're talking about 30-year bonds. That seems a little long.
20 to 25, I think, is probably in the sense of bonding correct. You would be looking for something a little shorter than 30 years. But there are some projects that wouldn't necessarily be bonded for, thus the 30-year that we had put into that.
So if we put a provision in here that authorized this up to this bond amount but limited you to 20 years, would that work?
I believe it would be something that we'd be able to work.
I think that's kind of a new, it seems like a long ways out for infrastructure to take 30 years to pay for it and then be in a situation of maybe having to replace it again by then.
Well, and some of that, again, being tied back to, Mr. Chair, the aspect of the operational services side and trying to look long term.
And Mr. Fitzinger, the position of the state or the Cloquet Chamber of Commerce?
Cloquet Chamber of Commerce has supported both verbally and in written form, providing the opportunity for the residents to vote.
Any questions, members? We will do our best.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to come down, Senator Lurie. Thank you. Chair lays over Senate file 3262 for possible inclusion in the committee bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Anderson. Senate file 1232.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members. I really appreciate your taking us as we have to get our committee going at 10. Senate file 1232 is a bill to save the jobs at the Ford plant. And, Mr. Chair, I think you know better than anyone and have talked about more than anyone how critically important. If we do nothing else this session, we need to do everything that we can to preserve, create, retain jobs in Minnesota. We have one of the best workforces in the nation at our current plant in St. Paul, but this plant, as you all know, is scheduled to shut down in 2011. So we come to us, we have a delete all amendment, the A3 amendment. I'd appreciate it if that would be in front of members, that focuses this bill only on this particular mission, which is to save that plant, to retrofit it and to retool it so that we will attract hundreds of good-paying jobs and keep that site in operation. This bill is put together in cooperation with the state of Minnesota, indeed, and the city of St. Paul and the United Auto Workers. So we come to you all together in our support for this proposal. It provides important tools for state efforts to retain and grow jobs at our only car manufacturing plant. The legislation proposes a series of tax exemptions and incentives to encourage Ford or a different automaker as they move forward to select the next generation of vehicle manufacturing sites. As I mentioned, the Ford Motor Company is committed to closing this plant by 2011, and I have Cecile Bedore from the City of St. Paul to talk about the efforts that the city has made to date on trying to work with Ford Motor Company. Mark Loftus from Deed will get into the details of the bill, and we'll have Rhonda Danielson from the UAW, the United Auto Workers, today will speak to the success of that workforce at the Ford plant and the role that UAW plays in our region. Just a couple more comments I'd like to make before I turn it over to them. The plant in Highland Park in St. Paul has been there since 1919. And, boy, I'd sure like to celebrate the 100th anniversary of that plant with jobs. Wouldn't you all like to be there? It's only 9 short years away. This is so important because it's so many jobs, and they're good jobs for our region. This is not just about my city. I should point out that right now there's still 750 full-time employees at the plant. That's down from 2,300 workers at its peak time. 20% of the remaining workers in the workforce live in Ramsey County. The other 80% of these workers live outside of Ramsey County and in the surrounding region. So this affects workers and their families from all around the metropolitan area and beyond, hundreds of workers. These are excellent jobs with family-supporting wages, ongoing training and educational opportunities, and they help support and provide a good quality of life for hundreds of Minnesotans. We know that Ford is closing plants around the country, and we know that we need to retain and regrow these good-paying quality-of-life jobs. We know that in order to do that, to be in the running, we have to compete with other states that are working hard to keep Ford plants open in their states. This bill creates a tool that puts us in the game, that gives us a chance to compete and contend for those future plants and those future jobs. We don't know for sure if this tool will ever be used by the state, but it creates a tool that is available for the state of Minnesota to use to make us serious contenders for that plant to have a future and those jobs to have a future here in St. Paul and in Minnesota. We really can't afford to pass by the chance that we may have. We can't afford to wonder if we should have done this. And so, members, I hope you'll give this serious consideration. I'll turn it over to Cecile Bedore next from the Port Authority with the City of St. Paul.
Senator Anderson, we have the delete everything amendment we should adopt, but can you tell me, this is not the first committee for this bill?
Mr. Chair, just to remind members that you actually heard this bill last year in its original form, which was for green manufacturing zones, for shutdown manufacturing sites around the state and the Ford plant to create tax incentives. So this is a delete all amendment. It removes all of that previous language that you heard last year. So the bill's been sitting in the committee since last year.
And this just makes it a Job Z type project.
Exactly. It creates the
delete all does.
Yes.
For one project.
For one project at one site.
Senator Skoy moves the A3 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
And Mr. Chair, Cecile Bedore is from our Planning and Economic Development Agency with the City of St. Paul.
Thank you, Senator Anderson and Mr. Chair and members. Again, for the record, my name is Cecile Bedore. I'm the Director of Planning and Economic Development for the City of St. Paul. On behalf of Mayor Coleman, I do want to thank Senator Anderson as well as the UAW and State Deed staff for working on this really important bill. The mayor regrets that he can't be here. 4 months into the mayor's first term, we were notified by Ford Motor Company of their intention to close the St. Paul plant as part of an overall national restructuring. 2,300 jobs were at stake. Through the waves of the economy, changes in the purchasing of the Ford Ranger, the plant was the closing was stayed for a brief period of time, and as Senator Anderson noted, is now scheduled to close in September of 2011. Despite staying open, 1,500 jobs were lost. As Senator Anderson noted, we are down to 750 jobs, but these are 750 highly paid, excellent jobs. During this time, we have been communicating regularly with Ford Motor Company, urging their retention of the St. Paul operations. And in recent months, we've watched as other states have approved incentive packages as a means to retain automakers, that are currently there, and also as a tool to recruit additional automakers. Michigan, Kentucky, Ohio, Missouri, and Illinois are all examples of states that have put options on the table. Illinois is one example who has been quite successful. Ford has recently agreed to terms with the state that include tax credits in return for 1,200 new jobs in the Chicago area. Seeing these efforts led Mayor Coleman to send another letter to Governor Plenty asking him in December to work with his staff to come up with another package that would put Minnesota in the game with these other states. The automotive industry is changing, and we want to make sure that the state is prepared to take advantage of these changing and evolving industry. To that end, we really must be in a position to make sure that Ford can retrofit the existing plant to allow for the manufacturing of modern vehicles. This retrofit, which would move the plant from a single to a multi-platform plant, will prepare Ford for changes in the future, allowing for manufacturing flexibility as the automotive industry continues to evolve over time. While Ford did announce their intention to close the plant, we know from past experience and the past actions of Ford that they can change their mind given the right circumstances and given the right incentives to do so. And we do know that if this plant closes, we will lose 750 good-paying jobs. If the plant does close, we do have a lot of unknowns. We don't know, for example, how long it will take Ford to determine exactly what the contamination is on that site. We don't know what that will take to clean that up. We don't know what the cost of that will be. So we could have a plant, we could have a large piece of property that's sitting there with very little tax benefits to the state or city or the county as it sits vacant and in a holding pattern. Again, as Steve explains the tax benefits that are presented in this bill, we want you to keep in mind that none of this matters if the plant closes. If the plant closes, those 750 jobs go away, and those folks join the ranks of the unemployed. And our hope is that you'll join us in making sure that that doesn't happen. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Loftus. I'm with DEED. We have worked closely with the Senator and with the City of St. Paul and the Port Authority in Ramsey County all together to try to make an aggressive stance to ensure that we can offer something to help Ford produce another vehicle there or perhaps attract another vehicle manufacturing. The bill itself does have provisions that are like the Jobs E program, corporate income tax or corporate franchise tax exemption, state and local property tax exemptions. It has sales tax exemptions. But there's one new element that's not in the current Jobs E program, and that is a refundable job retention and creation credits. Based on the 750 full-time jobs at the plant, there would be a $2,500 annual credit that could be refundable to Ford or another manufacturer based on that activity, as well as additional jobs beyond 750 to the level of $3,500 a job credit. So those are all that is the one element that's different, Mr. Chairman, from the existing Jobs E program. I should also say that in our efforts with the city and the port in Ramsey County, we've looked at some other options too that don't require legislation, but I think illustrate creativity on our part. For example, the Port Authority has discussed the possibility of actually acquiring the site based on Ford's credit and then leasing it back to them, which would help provide cash into the operation for Ford's investment. And we've also talked about using federal revenue facility bonds that could help finance equipment for Ford or another company based on the stimulus dollars that we have capacity in the state to use. So this proposal before you in legislation does require legislative action, of course, but I want to make it known that there are other things we're working on that illustrate our efforts to be as creative as we possibly can to keep the jobs we have or to attract additional jobs in the future.
Well, Mr. Loftus, are you suggesting with this language that if Ford made a decision to continue operation of the plant as it's operating today, they decide they're going to continue to make the Ranger trucks there, that the state would pay Ford, if they maintain 750 employees there, The state would pay him $1.8 million a year to keep that plant open in a corporate tax reduction?
Mr. Chairman, this bill does not include that possibility. Ford would, and that's predicated on two things. One is that we will not provide these benefits just to keep the plant operating. That's not the intent. The second point, though, even kind of overrides that, is that Ford has said they will end Ranger production. They don't make a six-cylinder engine for the Ranger anymore. They will not plan to make that. They have to retrofit that plant for another vehicle. The Ranger vehicle itself, as I'm told, is also outdated and needs to be retrofitted. So it isn't even an option, and I think if we, as we've considered this proposal, this is a post-Ranger option. We are not intending it to be keeping the plant open option.
But Mr. Lopez, didn't they propose set a date to close the plant once already and then have extended it?
Mr. Chairman, they have. They have maybe twice. That's happened?
Well, I think the language would allow them, counsel tells me, to receive this $2,500 per employee in a corporate tax reduction if they just continue to stay in operation past the closing date. I don't think that's not the intent.
It's
I think we
intent.
Need to do a bit of work on it.
Mr. Chairman, if that is as written, we should certainly work on changing that.
Because the intent is for a new facility, a new product.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, Mr. Chair, I mean, the bill does require the commissioner to designate it as a create automotive recovery zone right. before they'd be eligible for any of these. So it would certainly take an affirmative step by the commissioner. But if we want to clarify that, absolutely, that's the intention. And, you know, we may get a couple of short extensions, you know, if things go well. But in the end, we know that it's not going to be a permanent solution.
Senator Lemire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson or Mr. Loftus, has the Ford company been informed of this proposal, and do we have any word back from them of whether or not they're interested?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I did speak yesterday, and the city has spoken with the same individuals at Ford as I have. We presented this set of options to them last week in fairly precise detail so that they could put a value on it and even evaluate it. I heard yesterday from the senior government relations official for the Midwestern region of Ford that they find it interesting as a proposal. They have no plans to keep the plant open beyond the third quarter of 2011, as they've discussed, nor do they have any plans on the books to produce another vehicle there. Ford recognizes that the state of Minnesota and our local partners are trying to be aggressive at looking at the future. The automotive future continues to be in flux, and Ford will be making decisions about other vehicles in the future as they also decide to close plants, as they will say publicly that there is excess capacity within their system of plants, and they'll need to reduce that capacity. Our offer here provides the potential that Minnesota can be in play when they consider future locations. For all the reasons Senator Anderson pointed out, the quality of the workforce is the best in North America. And that is a huge advantage and asset for them. So there are possibilities that we are trying to anticipate, but we believe that if we don't do anything, that we'll have no chance at the further operation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lemire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought at one time Job Z was just for rural Minnesota, for the expanding economic diversity in rural Minnesota. And have we altered that requirement, or would this now break that parameter and then it provides jobs or corporate enhancement in the Twin Cities area?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer, the Job Z program is for counties outside of the seven-county metropolitan area.
Okay.
We did make an exception to the current Job Z program, not geographically, but amended some of the provisions in last year's Senate tax bill for a glass company down at Faribault, I believe, that the state was in competition with, I want to say, Indiana. Mr. Loftus was another state anyway. But
New York.
We were successful in that.
We were, yes.
That expansion. And so this would be the first time I think we've done something like this in the Seven County area, I believe. Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, the bill that I introduced last year would expand it so it would be statewide, but that's not what this is. The amendment that you've adopted now would limit it to an automotive manufacturing plant in a city of the first class. So that's the only site that would be eligible for this, and so it wouldn't expand Job Z beyond that. It would only be for this particular site. Mr. Chair, could I ask Ms. Danielson to speak briefly on the workforce?
Well, Ms. Chair, after Ms. Danielson, I have another question to ask.
Senator Lemmer, go ahead.
The question I have, and with all due respect to the auto workers at the Ford plant, I think Boston Scientific just announced this last week that they were laying off 1,000 people. Now, they're reflective of the medical product industry. And, you know, I guess the question is will for every business that's laying off or closing down, will it be the pattern of the legislature to include them in Job Z? And the question that I have is, and I've talked about it many times, is that Job Z is one of those temporary incentive-type programs that we continue to rely on to reform Minnesota, but we really don't reform Minnesota. It's just special treatment for business. And it's kind of close to business corporate welfare, as far as I'm concerned. And I know the incentive is to keep jobs, and I think that's vitally important. That should be our goal. But if we finally get to the point that Job Z has to be applied to every corporation with the potential of losing jobs, maybe we should have a broader discussion of just reforming the whole tax structure in Minnesota and do it right rather than piecemeal. And that's the point. I have a lot of respect for what Senator Anderson is trying to do with the Ford plant, but it starts tiptoeing into the broader discussion that our legislature really fails to address.
Senator Lemmer, I tried to put up a little trial balloon on that subject back about a week ago. Didn't go that well. But I do think I think the next legislature is going to have a discussion about tax reform. I think it's inevitable. Ms. Jamison?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'm Rhonda Danielson. I'm the president of Local 879 UAW. I would first like to thank the 750 UAW members who I represent for all their hard work and dedication they have shown over the last 3 years. We have made sacrifices in the loss of benefits, such as pay raises, cost of living advances, and pay scheduled holidays. We have taken additional pay cuts to assist with the survival of Ford Motor Company and our Twin Cities assembly plant. The UAW, along with Ford and the contracted employees, have weathered the bad economy. The loss of a shift in 2007, a reduction of our workforce from over 2,300 members to currently a little over 750 members, and two scheduled plant closings in 2008 and 2009. Despite all the challenges our membership and the plant have had to face in the last 3 years, we here at Twin Cities Assembly have managed to win numerous awards. The J.D. Powers and Associates Award for Highest in Initial Quality Midsize Pickup in 2008 and 2009, the Harbor Report Award for Efficiency in 2009, and the North American President's Quality Award for 2008 and 2009. When it comes to building a safe quality vehicle for the consumer, Local 879 UAW stands second to none. Our history shows that in the awards we continue to receive back it up. We are the best in class. The working environment has changed a lot since I hired in at Ford. Instead of the continuous confrontation between workers and management, there is a newfound mutual understanding that we must cooperate and work together in order to survive not only the economy of the United States, but the global economy as well. The work environment found within the walls of Twin Cities Assembly Plant is not found anywhere else in the UAW Ford facilities. The cooperation between our UAW members and Ford management has set a benchmark for other plants that are striving to follow. In the past 3 years, we have worked together to keep our plant open and continue to stay a viable resource for Ford, the City of St. Paul, and the State of Minnesota. Annually, the UAW membership wages generate over $40 million in gross taxable wages for the State of Minnesota. Along with the UAW workers, TCAP pays vendors and contractors, which are Aerotech for salaried employees, Aristio, Albers, and Collins for our skilled trade employees, and Marsden for our janitorial services. There are about 130 non-Ford skilled trade workers, 25 contract employees, and 18 agency employees. These additional jobs generate an additional $10 million in taxable wages, and they support the production at our plant. Then finally add on the local Ford management income of around $3.5 million in gross taxable wages. You also need to consider the rail workers and the truck drivers as well. Each day, over 20 rail cars and 75 semi-trucks arrive with production materials. These are suppliers and other supporting organizations that generate taxable income for the state of Minnesota. All these jobs will be lost if production at Twin Cities Assembly stops. So in conclusion, this legislation should not only ensure that the current base automotive industry valued at over $54 million in wages continues to exist. It should encourage expansion in automotive industries that support assemblies to move closer, creating more jobs for the state. I am confident that you all make the right decision and work together to ensure the survival of Twin Cities Assembly Plant and the survival of the team of hardworking employees found within. I want to thank the chair and the committee for your time.
Ms. Anderson, how many FTEs are at the plant today?
Pardon me?
How many full-time equivalents at the plant today?
How many UAW?
How many employees?
750 UAW, but there's also contract employees. It's close to 1,000 with salary and contract employees.
So that's the $40 million in payroll is based on about 1,000 people?
$54 million, based on the employees that are within the plant right now.
It's 54 for the employees in the plant. That's not outside vendors?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Loftus, the jobs credit is very generous. I mean, it reads to me like if there's $54 million in total wages, it gives back to them almost entirely all the income taxes that are paid in on all that payroll. It's probably pretty close. And as a corporate tax reduction. So, I mean, obviously it's much more generous than the provisions that are in Job Z. How did we arrive at a jobs credit this generous? Is it linked to some other proposal some other state has made, or where did the numbers come from?
Mr. Chairman, the refundable retention and creation credit is based on the kinds of things that Ford and other manufacturers are being offered in other states. I believe the state of Illinois offered job credits for their Ford Explorer plant, which is somewhere in the range of $28 million over a 10-year period that they provided. That's their primary incentive that they offered. It's the kind of incentive that we haven't offered in the past. It's a sizable number, yes. It also gets the attention of corporate decision makers who can look at things like corporate income tax and say, well, we're not making a lot of money right now. Maybe corporate income tax isn't going to be a factor or exemptions from that. But job creation at the size of these manufacturing plants for automakers are sizable job creators, and if that gives us an opportunity to use that as the incentive. We should have said this earlier, but we're kind of looking at this as a true but-for situation. But for a decision by Ford to build something else there or someone else, these jobs won't be there at all. Rhonda and her union members will not have those positions at the Ford site. They are all going away, and that doesn't mean that we should provide unlimited benefits, but it also suggests that if we don't provide benefits that get the attention of someone like Ford, this plant will not operate there. So on an annual basis, we've done different scenarios of the cost of these benefits, and on the low side, something in the range of $24 million over the 12-year period, Mr. Chairman, and on the high side of the refundable tax credits, $26 million. But that's all based on 750 jobs plus, I think, another 50 or 100 full-time positions. So,
Mr. Loftus, does that include the exemption from sales tax and the exemption from corporate income taxes and the other things that are included in Job Z?
No, those numbers that I gave you do not. That's just the refundable jobs credits. If we look at,
because I mean the total package includes the exemption on sales tax,
yes,
the exemption on corporate income taxes for 12 years, no property taxes for 12 years. The basket of incentives is much more than the jobs credit. It's in the neighborhood of, I don't know, you tell me, 40, 50 million? What's the number?
That's a good number, Mr. Chairman. On the low side, we've estimated around 46 million, on the high side, maybe 89 million. But that's all based on a wide basket of assumptions. If Ford doesn't make any money, they don't pay any tax. And even if they may start making money this year, they have carry forward tax credit, tax advantages for that. Things like the sales tax exemption depend on what they do to the plant. We've talked about this plant being anywhere from $100 to $500 million investment to retrofit for another vehicle. Well, between $100 million and $500 million, it's a very wide range. Depends on what they choose to do, and even the property tax as well. It depends on what they do there to invest will affect how the assessor looks at the value of the property, which currently is valued very, very, very low because they had announced shutdown of the facility. So I would say that range of 46 to 89 million over that 12-year period is our best possible estimate that we can come up with, Mr. Chairman.
Anything else, members? Senator Limmer, what do you think?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to do some fast math here. If one has a $50 million value to this program, divide it over 12 years, and then divide it by 750 jobs, and I'm trying to figure out if that's a good deal or not. How far do you invest in one job in the state of Minnesota without doing a total reform of our system? And so I don't have the answer to the math right now. But one can get emotionally attached to making sure that we have jobs, and yet at the same time, there's other industries that don't have anything from the state government that's being offered. And so those jobs and the security of those families are just as important as these people. And the question is, how much more public investment do we put into it when we can't even pay our own bills? And you know the financial condition in the next 2 years of what we're going to be facing, and I don't think either one of us relish the task of doing that. But nevertheless, I'm still trying to put pencil and paper together on it.
Well, that's been one of the criticisms of Job Z, is the amount of state subsidy to create or retain a job. Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the dialogue here. I think it's very helpful and constructive. And Senator Limmer, you're completely right. Every job that's lost is important and devastating. And I guess the case that I would make, I mean, part of the criticism of Job Z is that it wasn't really targeted to adding value. I mean, we're moving businesses from across town to compete with other businesses, or bringing, in some cases, jobs that weren't the highest wage jobs. This is different. And the car manufacturing business is pretty unique. And I hear what you're saying, and I understand it's unfortunate, the reality that we have to live in. And the reality is that states around the country are competing for these particular plants. And to be in the ball game at all, to be on the playing field, those are my only sports analogies I can use, are baseball. You know, we have to put something on the table that's, like it or not, that's the reality. So thank goodness the baseball season's coming. The other piece of it that I think is important, why these jobs are so valuable, is that they're manufacturing jobs, they're good-paying jobs. I think being in an urban setting is also a unique asset that we offer for a plant. You know, if they want it to be a greener type plant, there's a lot of opportunity for doing that. The workforce is unique. But, you know, in St. Paul alone, we've lost 70 to 80% of our manufacturing jobs over the last decade or so. And that's completely typical, unfortunately. So it's the manufacturing base. I think when we target incentives to those kinds of jobs and these big ticket industries, you know, that's where it might be worthwhile. I think it is worthwhile for us to say we should put some money on the table. Not for every business that comes along, but these are pretty unique. And I guess the last thing I would say is, you know, there's a time limit to these incentives that we're talking about. You know, let's hope that the plant would be there for another 100 years if we make this happen. And so we can look back in 50 years if we're still on this earth and say, you know, we did something that made a difference for the long term, for generations.
Senator Anderson, thank you. Anything else, committee? Kind of in the interest of full disclosure, I am going to have a conversation with Representative Lencheski that this may be something that if we're going to do it, probably better fits in the jobs bill than in the omnibus tax bill. So we'll talk with her about that. Anything else? Chair leads over Senate file 1232 as amended.
Thank you very
Senator
much.
Anderson, thank you.
Mr. Chair
thank
and
you.
Members.
Senator Kilosh.
Mr. Chair, I have the Senate file 2557. I have a request for just a small amendment to my bill.
Senator Skoy moves the A1 amendment. Senator Kilosh, you want to explain what the A1 is?
That is the
that's interesting.
That changes the line 118 from 7,500 to 7,400. So what I'm the 7,400 was an arbitrary number. We found that the past census kept an apprenticeship school facility out of that. So this is just a correction of that. It was never intended to be that. The numbers for the census are well over 8,000 currently for that that building. It just when the census was taken, they were under that. So.
On the Skoy motion on the A1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A1 is adopted. Senator Kilosh, tell us what your bill does.
Mr. Chair, this bill is to exempt a building at Caribou Lake Elementary School, which is located in Grand Lake Township. The school is scheduled to close at the end of the school year. And a purchase agreement is currently in the works by a nonprofit trust, which will own and operate this facility. The trust consists of both unions and contractors, and the building will be remodeled so it can be used as an apprentice training facility to train sheet metal workers, heating, ventilating, air conditioning, in the air conditioning trade. The Grand Lake Fire Department and Grand Lake Township both currently reside in the school building. They will continue to use the building after it is converted to an apprenticeship training facility. And the language of this bill is narrowly crafted so as to only apply to this particular situation. The property has always been tax exempt and never paid property taxes. With me is John Kornstrom, and he is with the sheet metal workers and can describe the actual situation of the negotiations and why they're requesting this.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm actually with the Sheet Metal Air Conditioning and Roofing Contractors Association. The nonprofit trust is made up of appointees from the contractor side as well as the union side. Marty Strub is the business manager of Sheet Metal Workers Local 10. He's also present here today. This is a building that is currently being used as a school. We hope to continue to use it as a different type of a school for apprenticeship training. We have the support of the community. They want to continue to have this building be used as a school and to facilitate having the fire department and the township offices in the building. And so we believe it is a good fit for the two organizations. We also believe that from a policy standpoint, as you have in the past, that supporting apprenticeship training in this way is a great investment for the state of Minnesota in that these programs run themselves. They're not subsidized by state funding or in the same way that you do tech schools, yet we turn out people that go into very successful careers, paid health insurance, pension benefits, and in the Duluth Superior area, these employees will turn out earning a wage package of in the neighborhood of $45 per hour.
Yeah.
So we believe it is in the best interest of our program and hopefully the state as well to proceed with this amendment.
Senator Kielosch, if this school was a couple miles up the road in Hermantown, it would qualify for the property tax exemption, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lemire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm unfamiliar with where people learn apprenticeship in this field. Do you learn this vocation at a vocational institute of some sort? Is that where you normally would learn this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are some HVAC and sheet metal programs in some of the tech schools. More often, those would be a predecessor to someone getting into an apprenticeship program and having more expansive knowledge. And so people that come into this program, which would be attending this school, some may come through trade school, others would not prior to going here.
Mr. Chair, this apprentice training facility, are there others in the state? I don't know of any, but I was just wondering. I thought they learned on the job with a journeyman or some other labor union organized, overseen training program.
Senator Limmer, these apprenticeship programs are run by the Department of Labor and Industry, and apprentices are registered in an official program that's registered with Labor and Industry. And then in addition to the on-the-job portion that you mentioned, in the apprenticeship standards, the apprentices have to do, in most programs, I think it's about 140 hours of actual schooling in a facility, in addition to the workout on the job. And I think the numbers vary a little bit, but Mr. Kornstrom, what's the sheet metal number for classroom in the apprenticeship school, annual number for apprentices?
200 hours of classroom training, and it's a four-year program. 200 hours per year.
Any questions, members? Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Kielosch, I heard that the local township is supportive. A resolution might be helpful if you could bring one of those. A resolution from the town board that they support this property tax exemption. I think we've asked for that in the past.
Yeah, I think Senator Scoy, I think that's a good point. I think the one thing that's a little different about this is the property is not on the tax rolls today.
Right.
It's currently a K-3 school, so it's not as though they're giving up some tax capacity. I think the question kind of is whether the school district is going to tear the school down or maybe sell it to the sheet metal workers to create an apprenticeship school there.
Mr. Chair, the other possible problem could be that another buyer may not want the township offices and fire department in the building, and this is already part of the agreement with the sheet metal workers, and this is the center of that township for their offices and kind of a focal point for the township's business. So.
Sir Limmer?
And one last question. Do you have a letter of support from the Department of Labor and Industry on this? Are they in favor of it? Or are we, by putting this in, would we be competing with maybe another Votech school in the immediate area? That's all I would need to know.
Senator Kilak?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we have not gone through it because this is really a tax issue as far as the current building is not on the tax rolls, and we're just asking that it continue to stay off the tax rolls because it's going to just change the kind of school it is from an elementary school to a apprentice training school.
Senator Kilosh, where's the training for those sheet metal workers that live in that part of the state being done now?
We are currently renting some space from Lake Superior College. And the discussions with them actually have been positive as well, and that we would continue to have a relationship with them. And they hope to use that facility for possibly some other training as well. So it would the partnership with Lake Superior College would continue if this arrangement goes forward.
Any other questions, members? Chair lays over Senate file 2557 as amended. Senator Kilosh, Mr. Quenstrom, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Plogemiller.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, members. Senate file 3281. Is a bill related to Minneapolis's homeless assistance TIF district that I had that we passed in 2006. Let me try to be relatively compact here. This is a complex, relatively complex district. It's in downtown Minneapolis, kind of by the Target Center, north of the Orpheum, kind of locked by the freeway. It involves the Housing Finance Agency, Catholic Charities, private developer. It's going to have workforce housing. It's going to have a wellness center. It's going to have a Lund's grocery and transitional housing and homeless shelter. So it's a complex group of things in a kind of freeway torn up area. And what the city is trying to accomplish is basically revitalizing this entire area. So that the stuff right next to Hennepin Avenue is very vibrant, part of the entertainment district, and provides downtown housing for workforce, people who work downtown. At the same time, they're trying to take two homeless shelters that exist in the general area, relocate one of them so that they become co-located, and that's what the Catholic Charities is involved in. There has already been a $13 million assistance by the Housing Finance Agency for the transitional housing that will be done by a nonprofit development corporation. The bottom two floors of that are going to be homeless shelter that is run by Catholic Charities. The nonprofit is good to go on this, but because the market has slowed down, the private development related to this is not ripe at this moment. They can't consummate the business deals that they need to do for various reasons because of the economy. So the request here is to basically allow the tax increment, prior to the tax increment district actually being formed and finished, they would like to complete the transitional housing or get started on it, and then the increments from the private development are going to help subsidize the transitional housing. And so the bill is simple, but it sounds like, oh my gosh, what's going on here? It's going to allow the increments be used on a project that actually gets started before the district is created. That's what this bill does. I don't know if I think I've summarized it pretty well. It is supported by all parties that are involved here, but it is a rarely unique kind of request. Again, the Housing Finance Agency is already willing to put in $13 million for the part of the project that's going to be partially subsidized by the increment of the private development. And they would like to go ahead with that because as the economy's down, you may not be able to complete your deal with the bank for the private development, but the need for transitional housing and homeless shelters is increasing.
Yes.
Senator Pogemiller, how much money has been kind of upfronted?
Right now, there's this $13 million from the Housing Finance Agency. This is about $122 million total project going on here.
It's an existing.
So no one's lost any money or anything yet, but they just won't be able to. They need to be able to promise that the $13 million will be backed up by the private increment. And so that's why the timing issue is it is. The private development is going to happen. It's an incredible block right next to Hennepin Avenue. Yeah. So it's going to happen. It's a question of can you make these other things? Because part of that project is a relocation of a current Catholic Charities facility. And that's what this other building is about that's going to be done somewhere else in the district, on the other side of the freeway in the district.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Miller. When do they anticipate starting the district? Is it within the next couple of years, or
yes.
Is it further out than that?
No, I think it's in the next couple of years. But I can Janet Pope can speak to that, or the city can speak to that.
That's right. Hi, I'm Janet Pope from Community Housing. Senator Rest, I think the goal is to do it within the year. However, the shelter and housing, we hope to get started on this summer. Therefore, the timing issue.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Pocamiller, there's not a huge amount of time.
There should not be.
It's just there is a timing issue.
One thing, otherwise you would start the district sooner. One thing council might want to consider is putting some kind of timing thing in here. Not too tight, but timing. The other thing to keep in mind is this is a fairly unique district in general because of what we did in 06. There aren't going to be too many homeless assistance tax increment districts around. But if the committee's more comfortable, some kind of general timing on this might
Senator Pogemiller, what percentage of the square footage of the development is homeless assistance?
Well, I don't know that answer.
Well, that's a good question. We're talking about the homeless one, and it's permanent housing and shelter for long-term homeless folks, and that's about a 70,000-square-foot facility. I don't know the square footage of the for-profit development.
It's a seven-story high rise, right, that you're going to have.
I get it.
Five floors of transitional housing for various types of consumers, chemical dependency and other things, and then the two lower floors are going to be a more traditional homeless shelter.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pogemiller. How do you collect the increment on a project that isn't started? I don't understand that.
That's the point of this. You're basically going to be committing increments prior to the district actually being created. This facility is actually in Senator Dibble's district. I think
Senator Higgins.
Oh, it's in Higgins' district?
It's across the street.
Yeah, but it's called Box Leitner Place.
Senator Dibble, is this a good idea?
Mr. Chair, I absolutely think so. We need to do our part to provide for folks who need housing.
Senator Higgins supports it, you think?
Oh, I'm guessing she does, yeah.
Senator Pogemiller?
So.
Senator Rest.
So just to be clear, that the construction of this seven-story building is starting this summer?
Correct.
That's starting this summer.
That's the goal.
How close is it to Target Field?
Oh, it's within several blocks, and we're actually going to a meet and greet with them, and they will be one of our neighbors. We're looking forward to it, and have actually been in touch with the city on coordinating between the two facilities.
Thank you.
This whole, it's kind of hard to picture if we had a map from above. There's mm-hmm. all kinds of freeways going through here, so there are kind of these islands that are not, you know, not everybody's going to be wandering through here. So.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogamiller, I was more interested in if there was a view of the field.
I think not, this is actually
not,
value.
Not, no concerns about the clients.
Probably not at seven stories, but.
I think it's behind, it's actually behind home plate, kind of.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe not quite that close.
Yeah, the other side now, if you're on the other part.
I understand
side,
that.
You yep. have some views.
So I was asking.
Other questions, members? Curley's over Senate File 3281 for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Pogamiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Senator Scoia, I have a bill up in education, they just let me know. So, Senator Solon.
Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3305 is probably our best hope for attracting a significant employer in Minnesota in the Arrowhead region. This bill extends the time duration of Jobsy incentives in St. Louis County, and these incentives will be part of a package that we hope will attract a wind turbine manufacturer and 15,000 jobs to Minnesota.
1,500.
I'm sorry, 1,500. That's
still a lot.
A little inflated, but 1,500 is a lot. We are in competition with other states to attract these jobs, and we need to ensure that we put our best foot forward in this competition. There have been in excess of 40 states that have been vying for this, or other locations that have been vying for this project. It's a foreign company, and we are one of two states that are remaining on the list of potential sites for this project. I have with me representatives from the city of Duluth, both from the city government and the business community. I have Mayor Don Ness, and I have Lisa Hyacin from Apex, and as well, there's a representative from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, I think Mark Loftus, who would be available to provide other information and answer any questions. And Mr. Chair, before we get started, I have probably the A1 amendment that would put the it, this would be an author's amendment. It's the first hearing of the bill.
Senator Scheid moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Mayor Ness.
Mr. Chair and senators, thank you very much for the opportunity to address the committee. This is an exciting opportunity for Minnesota. As Senator Pretner Solon mentioned, we are. Have been in fierce competition with many communities across the nation for this opportunity, and it's now down to just a couple of communities in competition. This is a European wind turbine manufacturer who has proven successful in the European market. They are now looking to establish their North American headquarters in, as Senator Pretner Solon mentioned, up to 1,500 jobs in northeastern Minnesota, 600 jobs for a nacelle plant in Duluth, another 700 jobs for a blade plant on the Iron Range, and then also a headquarters and training facility in Duluth. We have a number of advantages over the communities that we've been competing with, and that brought us to this point, certainly our workforce, the logistics of our port, and the access to emerging wind markets. However, we do have a disadvantage in terms of the subsidy package that the other states are able to bring forward. And that's the reason that we're asking for this extension of the Jobs Z benefit for an additional 5 years. We understand that it's an unusual request, but I believe this is an unusual opportunity. We have a strong partnership with DEED, as well as APEX, who is our private economic development agency in Duluth and northeastern Minnesota, and Lisa Hyacin from APEX is here. And I just want to say this is an opportunity that we have been pursuing for the last year and a half and a significant amount of time prior to that to prepare for such an opportunity. So I'll turn it over to Ms. Hyacin.
Ms. Hyacin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here with you today. I'm Lisa Hyacin, Director of Business Development with the Area Partnership for Economic Development, commonly referred to as APEX. We are a private sector business and economic development organization representing 66 businesses in northeastern Minnesota and northwestern Wisconsin. I'm proud to say that our members have invested over $200,000 in this one private entity alone. As Mayor Ness indicated, we've been working with DEED on this project for at least the last 10 months. This original search started as a nationwide search, 40 communities, was then narrowed down to 11 states, finally four. And in February, DEED and other representatives and APEX traveled to Atlanta for final considerations by the company. Most recently, they were here. We've learned now that we are in the final considerations for this business. As Mayor Ness indicated, upwards of 1,300 jobs, $80 million in payroll. We've estimated that this Job Z benefit would be approximately $1.2 million each year in terms of a tax benefit to the company. We're ensuring that the taxpayers are getting return on this investment. We do have estimates that over $3 million, approximately $3 million in only income tax would be generated annually on that $80 million payroll. So we do ensure that this return on investment for the state of Minnesota is sound. We do need this extension to keep Minnesota in the running. The other states have a 10-year standard tax benefit for companies this size. And in order to keep us in the running and to put Minnesota over the finish line, this tax incentive is a tiebreaker, and our competitive advantages really will continue us across that finish line. So we thank you for your consideration and time today.
Senator Pretner-Solon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I might add that our port and our transportation hub really have given some incentive also to this project. And our energy policy and our recent seabed policy that is currently traveling through the legislature, which does require the 51% of the revenue go to a local company or a local owner, that having a windmill and blade factory in Minnesota would help them to meet some of those standards. And actually, this company has been in conversation with some of the developers here in Minnesota, and we're falling behind in meeting our needs. Part of it has been due to transmission, but part of it has been due to not being able to reach the supply of equipment, and this would help also.
And Mayor Ness, this is a current Job Z area. It's just the 12 years that originally was in for Job Z.
That's correct, Senator.
Questions, members?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to be sure I understood. Is this for both the blades and the turbines? Because
Mayor Ness.
I'm sorry. The Job Z is for the nacelle plant, which is would be located in Duluth.
And so,
Senator Scheid,
it's for all three.
What do they make? They make everything there?
I'm sorry. It is for all three locations: the nacelle plant in Duluth, the headquarters and training facility also in Duluth, and then the blade facility on the Iron Range.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Scheid,
Mr. Chairman, because I've been to Duluth and I've seen the blades down by the Port Authority, I think, and then I've seen the big boats come in. Maybe they're not boats. Ships. Bringing, and they come in with stuff and they go out with stuff related to wind energy. So it makes a whole lot of sense to be doing it all there. Yeah.
Other questions? Seeing none, anyone want to testify?
Mr. Loftus.
Mr. Chairman, I would just add that the provisions that we have for the extension are similar to the provisions last year for the SAGE project in Faribault. They are a little different, though, and we discovered in looking at the unemployment rate factor that was used last year for SAGE that they have we've had a hard time getting them qualified under that 10% higher than the statewide average number. We think when the numbers come out tomorrow, the SAGE project will qualify, so we'll get to that level with that. But this language is a bit different than SAGE. I wanted to make that clear. It's written such that if the unemployment rate is 10% higher than 10% or 10% greater than the statewide average any of the past 12 months, that they would qualify for this extension. Currently, you may be interested to know, St. Louis County does not qualify under the provision of 10% above the statewide average. They're 9.8%. However, I think five of the last 12 months they've qualified at that level of 10% greater than the statewide average. So we're trying to deal with a concern that was expressed last session about making sure that the benefits are provided for companies in areas of greater distress, and that's the measure we're working with. So I wanted to make that known too.
Thank you. Senator Pretner-Solon.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if you received a copy of the executive summary of the project, but this demonstrates that there is a projected more than $24 million impact in the state taxes to the state. That would include over $15.5 million for income taxes, over $5.5 million for property taxes, and nearly $3 million for state sales tax.
Thank you. Anything else, members? And Senator Pretner-Solon, you might want to talk to the chair about whether this would fit in the jobs bill.
Yes.
It would seem to me that would be where we probably would be working with this.
Mr. Chair, we did have that discussion, and he did want to lay it over for the jobs bill.
Okay. Chair lays Senate File 3305 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Pretner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Senator Saltzman? Senator Pretner-Solon, you're going to start with Senate File 23. Saltzman, you're going to start with 2307.
I would, Mr. Chair, like to start with the Angel Bill. We also have the Small Business Investment Company Bill, which is 2306. But there's a number of people here with 2307, so we could start with that. They are similar in their intent and purpose, but I would like to have a few folks talk about the Angel Investor Credit Bill.
And Senator Saltzman, you have a delete all amendment. Are you working off of that?
I do, Mr. Chair. It is a delete all, which is probably unusual to have at this point, but what we're trying to do is just restructure the layout of the bill. There aren't significant changes, but it just brings it into the same form as the companion bill in the House. And if we could do that, that would be helpful. I believe it's the A7 amendment.
I think Senator Saltzman will have the testimony to the amendment and then adopt the amendment the testimony. And there's a number of people that want to testify, and I understand that Senator Saltzman has time constraints as well as the committee, so if we could keep the testimony
Very good. Thank you, Mr.
Concise.
Chair. Would you like me to walk through it briefly to some of the sections? And maybe, Ms. Allen, I will ask her to do that. Overall, what this is the Angel Investor Credit Bill, which this committee has heard a number of times. It has passed this committee. It has passed on the floor of the Senate. And just to give you an update of what has happened between last May and then today is that we worked extensively with many different groups, stakeholder groups, trying to make sure that this bill is the best bill, the most competitive bill for Minnesota, and working out some of the issues that we had to make sure, again, that all the stakeholder groups have been involved. It is a 25% tax credit for those investors who invest in smaller Minnesota companies. It is targeted to smaller Minnesota companies, and certainly there are folks who would like to make it more broad, but we believe that with the dollars that we have, we really need to target the small and most promising companies in Minnesota. So maybe, Ms. Allen, if you would like to walk through, we have added a clawback provision, which we felt was would draw greater support for those who have some questions about it. We have it also has a sunset date, and it has an evaluation in it. So we think that that's important because we believe that that will increase support for the program as well. So maybe Ms. Allen could go through the bill briefly.
Ms. Allen, and the changes from what the Senate has heard in the past. We've heard this a number of times.
Mr. Chair, just to highlight the changes, you'll notice in Section 1 there's a cross-reference to data privacy. Those were not in the last stop for this bill. These have been added so that application materials would be considered private. The other change is on line 22 of page 1. We are lowering the amount to $30,000 for a qualified fund so that it's equal to 3 times rather than 5 times for an investor. The rest of the changes on pages 2 and 3 are pretty much just cosmetic, and it's a rearranging things so they're a little bit more clear in the statutes. As Senator Saltzman mentioned, there is now a sunset, which you will find on page 11, so that these credits are now available only through tax year 2016. And then the program evaluation that she mentioned is just before that, in subdivision 11, starting on page 10. And that's requiring an outside entity to look at the program and evaluate it by 2014. The clawback provision is a little farther back. Sorry to go backwards. On page 8, you'll notice at the beginning of subdivision 7 that the 3-year holding period, that is the same for the qualified investor. And now the businesses, this is new, this was not in finance, will have a 3-year clawback period. And what happens here is that if the business moves or does not meet the employment requirements, in the first year they have to pay back all of the credit, in the second year half of the credit, and in the third year 25% of the credit. And then you'll again see in subdivision 8 another data privacy change. Those are the changes to the bill other than the cosmetic and rearranging changes.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. Let's have the testimony.
There, Mr. Peterson is from Stillwater, and he has an exciting idea, and the Angel Investor Credit is just an example of, or he's just an example of a small company that, you know, could benefit from these kind of investments and keeping these companies in Minnesota. Mr. Peterson?
Software is a unique product.
Could you say your name
Troy
Peterson, for the record,
I'm sorry.
Please.
And which company are you?
Nibby Software.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Software is a unique product. You can solve a problem over and over with fixed engineering costs. There's a global change that's getting ready to happen in computing. Apple in April is putting out a $500 tablet. This is the OLPC, which maybe you guys are familiar with. They're sending millions of these overseas. There's a content need. My company has the desire to create a $49 premium high school education that will put through these avenues. When we talk to venture capitalists say, how many of these apps have you sold this quarter? The hardware is not available till 2 weeks from now. So angel investors can take a look at a company like ours and say, you know, you're going to interrupt a $3 trillion global market. We're really interested in that. By the way, I know somebody I went to college with who is the Undersecretary of Education for Honduras. That's angel investors buy themselves a job, and so they're unique, and they deserve special tax treatment.
Mr.
Senator Saltzman?
Yes. I have
Did we spend any money since I left?
I haven't spent any, Mr. Chair, but we're trying to grow jobs in Minnesota, and I want to thank you for the emphasis that you have put on this and for your support of the work that we've done over the interim on both Senate File 2307 and 2306. And I know there's some other people here, Ms. Who are also, and the one thing I would like to address with you, Mr. Yep. Chair, is that there are some people who have discussed who have discussed a provision to be added to this bill that would limit the amount of the investment. And that is of concern to us because small business owners who start with a small investment, equity investment, may be looking to grow three or four times that. And if we limit the amount of angel investor credits that can be invested in a company, then we could really defeat the purpose of this bill. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Rick Bremacombe. I'm a general partner at Sherpa Partners, an early-stage venture fund. I'm also a business owner. I have my own advisory practice working with emerging companies. I help companies grow. I'm here on behalf of myself and on behalf of a group of business owners called Mojo Minnesota. By way of background and why I feel that this was important to me and why I wanted to be here is that I've been working with emerging companies for about 25 years, the last 17 years in various forms of venture capital. I have co-founded companies. I have invested in companies. I have advised companies. I've had some that have won. I've had some that have lost. So I feel like I've seen the whole gamut of things. I co-founded Sherpa Partners Early Stage Venture Fund. I've also been president of the Minnesota Venture Capital Association and board member of the Minnesota Venture Capital Association. For those of you who don't have a feel for the magnitude of early stage capital and what it does for our economy, 11% of all private jobs, which is about 12 million jobs, have been created by companies that have received venture capital. And about 21% of U.S. GDP is created at companies that have received venture capital. On behalf of Mojo, which is a group of Twin Cities business leaders who are working to spur on entrepreneurship and re-energize our culture of innovation here, we're a group of business advisors, entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, angel investors, and attorneys. And we work with these companies on a daily basis, and we're committing to, as I said, create jobs and innovation in Minnesota. With regard to the current system of accessing capital, it's broken right now, and early-stage companies, such as this gentleman to my left, are starving for capital. We're not competing favorably with our neighboring states. All four of our neighboring states, the Dakotas, Iowa, and Wisconsin, have various tax credit programs in place in many other states across the country. So the playing field is not level with Minnesota and other parts of the country. Just so you know, our group, Mojo Minnesota, also supports long-term investments such as K-12, higher ed, transportation, and so forth. But those are longer-term investments, and what we're talking about here with the angel tax investor credit is a shorter-term investment. We can see job creation in the near term. Angel investing is a numbers game. Angel investors put their own dollars to work in high-risk ventures and often return zero return. But these returns pay back when they receive significant returns on investments that work, and what we're talking about here is how can we help create the kinds of companies that can be the next 3M, Medtronic, or Digital River. A robust angel investor tax credit will help create those types of companies and help create high-paying jobs. And another part of the angle here is the jobs at these types of companies are high-paying jobs. Engineering, technical jobs often have an average salary of $70,000 or above, so these are high-quality companies and jobs we're talking about. As it relates to the angel investor tax credit, there's kind of two things that we at Mojo wanted to say. Number one, between the Senate and the House bill, the Senate bill has more dollars in place currently anyway at $10 to $12 million a year and a sunset provision that's out a little farther than the Senate or than the House vision. as at Mojo, we'd prefer to not have a sunset provision, but with that said, would prefer the Senate's version. Secondly, any kind of limits you put onto a program like this is going to limit the effectiveness in the market for a program like this. We would suggest to let the market work. So, for instance, if you're going to limit the percent that an angel investor or angel fund could invest in, that's going to limit the value that this is going to have out in the marketplace. Likewise, if you create rules that hinder a company for 5 years out after they receive, after the investors receive these kinds of credits, that could also limit the benefit. And then the other two parts of the bill which would limit the effectiveness is if you have a cap on how much money a company will have received from venture capitalists or private investors, that would disqualify investment, because some of these industries like med device and other industries take a lot of capital, and if you have a cap of $2 million, you're going to limit the benefit to those industries. Likewise, if you put a cap on how much total capital a company received, you're also going to limit the benefit in the marketplace to an industry like this. So on behalf of myself as a venture capitalist, as an angel investor, an advisor to early stage companies, as well as to on behalf of Mojo Minnesota, we're here to support a robust angel investor tax credit, and we believe would have a significant impact in the marketplace.
Senator Saltzman.
Just a couple points, Mr. Chair, is that, you know, we have limited this with the dollars that we have. While it is a significant amount that is in this bill, you know, we are trying to target the smaller companies and hope that with, you know, experience, we could, you know, grow this to be more competitive with other states. But as we have mentioned, we have begun to target this to those smaller startup companies. There are a few other people here, and they have promised to just give a minute or two endorsement. I think it's important that we see that this is there is a broad base of support for this. Who are from economic development associations across the state and see the potential for this as well.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, is it Mr. Brimacombe?
Yes, sir.
I understand the importance of what you do. I very much see how it helps businesses grow. My question is, we give the tax credit. Does that mean you all of a sudden are investing more money? If so, where is that new money coming from? Or are you getting more people to become angel investors? Where is the expansion of the venture capital come from? Because obviously you've been investing money anyhow. Now we give the tax credit. You'll benefit from that, but that doesn't change anything other than if you invest the new money you're making from
tax. Actually, sir, you're targeting angel investors who are individual investors. So we're talking about higher net worth individuals who might otherwise not invest those money in companies, and so that person might just leave their money at their broker at Merrill Lynch or UBS or whomever, or government bonds or whatever. We're trying to provide an incentive to get the kind of the grassroots investors to step forward, invest with their neighbors, their friends, the companies that are being spun out of the University of Minnesota, and so it's kind of a grassroots, bottom-up type of thing. So this does not impact the venture capital industry per se. We're not, the bill does not give tax credits towards professional investors.
Mr. Chairman, the people who are already making the investments will get the credit. And your hope is you're going to draw more people in with the 10 or however many $12 million you're going to put in. Your hope is to draw more people into it, but obviously all the investments already being made will benefit from the credit as well.
Well, I think there's two parts to your question, and if I heard it correctly, you're trying to incent an individual investor to make an investment, and that person may or may not currently be an investor. If that person is an investor now and, let's say, is investing $100,000 a year, that person may invest another $100,000 or $200,000 or more. So that's kind of one part. Who are you targeting? And I think the answer is, in my opinion, would be somebody potentially who's there, but you also might entice somebody who's got this tax credit who's not doing it to currently do it. That's kind of one part of the equation. The other part, and again, the gentleman to my left, and you don't have to spend much time in the field to understand that these early stage companies are really struggling for capital. And again, you know, it's a bottom up. Let's get the individuals in our state investing in these companies And I guess just as a side note, we're not going to solve this problem today, but a lot of our population does the snowbird thing as they get older, and something like this might keep those folks engaged in the state by investing and or being involved in companies that otherwise might be kind of becoming disengaged with Minnesota. So, again, it's a bottoms-up, individual investor-oriented tax incentive, not something that's from the industry and top-down.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, one more question. The House Tax Committee did a thing in which they said that for 2009, Minnesota had almost $11 per capita in early stage investment compared to $2.30 in Wisconsin per capita. And Wisconsin has all these incentives in place that you're trying to get here. Why do we do so much better if they're doing all these investments?
Senator Salzman, want to take a shot at that?
That's an interesting point, Senator Marty, and we have talked about that, that some of the studies that were done, first of all, we looked at the fact that, well, we should be ahead of Wisconsin because of where we are in terms of our research. And so when that study came out, and I believe that if it's the same study we're talking about, they took out Massachusetts and also California, saying, well, they're on a whole different level than, you know, Minnesota, and then compared us with much smaller states. And frankly, that's not a good trend. We should be competing with Massachusetts and California. And so we are significantly ahead of Wisconsin now, but when we look at the trend lines, when you look at the reports that have come out looking at the investments that have happened in Minnesota over the last 4 to 5 years, the trend line is going down. We're also finding that we are still attracting the larger investments, but in terms of these smaller startup companies, which is where Minnesota has a very competitive edge still, that's where we're really struggling. And as Mr. Peterson has talked about before in another hearing that we had, talked about that it's sometimes easier to raise $5 or $6 million than it is to raise $500,000. So it really is looking at what are we doing with that small seed investments, and that's where this bill is really targeted. The other thing that I think we looked at with that too was the fact that some of the numbers that were used, I think there was a rebuttal to that study as well. Certainly, we want to be transparent. That's why we've built an evaluation report on an annual basis to look at how this is working. But we also have seen in Wisconsin of how much it has grown prior to, and they continue to expand their program. It's not just the dollars, it's also the number of angel investment networks that also form. So I hope that's given you a little bit of comfort. It's how we use our dollars. But this is really putting some fertilizer on that seed corn that grows these companies.
Senator Clay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Salzman, I'm going to go in a little different direction. I think your testifier talked about the negative impact that the sunset might have. And with the program evaluation that you have and the reports to the chairs of the committees, if it's not working, I would guess that the chairs would respond to that. Walk me through the rationale for the sunset.
That's a good point. Good point, Mr. Chair and Senator Skoy. We did not have the sunset originally in this bill, but we added that recently, again, to sort of give some comfort to some people who suggested that these kind of programs should have a sunset. I am open to removing that, but I also am sensitive to the fact that if that makes people more comfortable and gets this bill passed, if we need to put that in, but clearly what we've seen in other states is that this program has, you know, continued to grow because they have seen the results of it. We have, you know, in terms of the clawback, I mean, we do have some things in this state, in this bill, that other states don't have, but we don't believe it will seriously impact its like, you know, competitiveness. The one piece we are concerned about that is in another version of this bill is the percentage of ownership.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, but it doesn't make sense if we think this is a good idea to hamstring it with anything. I mean, I don't know. I understand the other body, but you either think this is worthwhile, and I do,
or you put out something that may not work as well because you've done that, because you've put on these limitations. So,
Senator Shad, the other body feels pretty strongly about that. We're just trying to get a little bit closer to them because our hope was that we could get a jobs bill passed relatively quickly and it not be bogged down in the larger conference committee discussions at the end of session. But if somebody wants to take it out, we can take it out. It just makes our discussions with the other body a little more difficult. So. But I do think if the program does what many of us hope it will,
sure.
I think the idea of revisiting tax credits by this legislature is probably a good thing. And if they work, then we should extend them. And if they don't, they go away by themselves.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, I think it's something that tax chairs, even in the other body, could work on removing them if they're not working. I mean, I think I'd move to take it out. And I think it's a worthwhile discussion in your conference committee. So I would do that.
12.3 to...
It's subdivision 13 on page 11.
We'll have council take a look at what the motion would need to be. It's in more than one place. So.
Okay.
If, Senator Skoy, have we moved the amendment so it's in front of us?
I'll move the amendment.
Senator Skoy moves the A7. Senator Marty, how do you feel about the sunset?
Mr. Chairman, I prefer the sunset myself.
You knew that. Could have asked me, Mr. Chairman, what Senator Hardy thought.
Senator Scheid, I think we already knew what you thought.
I knew what Senator Marty thought.
Senator, well, let's just have a discussion about the sunset, because, it does take us further away from the House. Senator Dibble, what do you think?
Well, Mr. Chair, I served on the tax conference committee last couple of years. I know how the other side feels about the whole idea of credits, much less this one, and I did glance at the research paper that Mr. Michaels put together. I think your point about being a little closer to the other body is an important one. I support this bill. But also, what I really support, though, is the research component, the subdivision 11, the program evaluation. It was like that's going to be an objective analysis on whether or not it has, Art Rolnick is fairly critical of these mechanisms, and Joel Michaels and others, let's find out the truth. But I also know that credit is difficult in this environment, so this might be the moment for something like this.
Senator Sundrum, you might be the deciding vote. What do you think about a sunset? Have you been following along?
Mr. Chair, would that be a sunset on a tax credit?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a sunset on the state spending money on one. Well, it's actually a sunset on spending. It would be fair to characterize it that way.
Sunset on investing, perhaps, Mr.
Chair. Mr. Chair, I think the legislature can sunset these anytime they want, and
that's right.
So to infer an automatic sunset, I guess I would not favor that. I would favor just simply in terms of legislative action. If we want to sunset it, we can do that. But I happen to believe these things are important, and that we ought to try to make them work. I think they're important from the standpoint, Mr. Chair, of making our state competitive. I know especially in the research area with states like Wisconsin, hopefully biomedical research may be allowed through this tax credit to emerge to even greater heights, and it's important. But in the end, relative to the sunset, I think the legislature is the grand sunset, and I'm comfortable with that.
So, Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask how the chair felt. Yes, I'd like to move to take it out. I guess I'll find out.
I think the chair feels that if we're going to sit in this room for a few weeks with the House, maybe not having a sunset is better, but if we're going to try and move a bill out early and people try to claim victory that we've done something on jobs, getting further away is probably not helpful. So I think it depends on what the approach is. If this is going to be rolled into the omnibus tax bill, I guess if that would be the motion that we roll this into the omnibus tax bill, then I think maybe No Sunset is, you know, probably the place to be to have that discussion with the House. If it's going to be included in the jobs bill, I probably have a different answer. How's that for no answer?
Well, Mr. Chair, we can either take it out now and put it in later if there's some agreement, or we can leave it in and take it out later.
I think the discussion's going to happen.
Discussion's going to happen at some point. So.
The path is clear for me now. Yeah.
Well, I know how I'm going to vote if we come to that. So.
Senator Scheid, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Yes, I'd move to take it out here.
Counsel, do we know?
It's in several places.
But the motion is?
In different wording, I think.
Counsel?
Mr. Chair, starting on page 5, line 10, we're going to delete a comma and everything after it. Line 11, delete 2017. On page 11, delete subdivision 13. And on page 12, after 2009, insert a period and delete everything after 2009. Delete lines 5 through 7.
And the effect of the Scheid motion is to take the sunset provision out. Correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no?
Thank you.
The motion prevails. The Scheid amendment is adopted. Senator Saltzman, I know you're sad about that.
Very sad, Mr. Chair, but I will do whatever I can to help you work with the House. And I appreciate the fact that you have a hard job ahead of you, and we do have to identify the funding source. And while we're debating this here, I believe the House is debating their version of this bill. So there are a few people who came from out of town, Mr. Chair, if they could just make a few quick comments. And I believe you do have letters of support from a number of groups. The Bio Business Alliance, the High Tech Association, Life Science Alley, EDM, the UEL. There's just been tremendous broad support, the Chamber of Commerce, Minnesota Business Partnership. So there's been a love fest around this bill. So we like that, but we also have to work on finding a funding source, as you know.
Senator Dibble.
I can wait until after the I have a couple little word additions, Mr. Chair.
Would like to go first?
I'll go first. Thank you, Senator Bach. I'm Julie Wishnock. I'm from the city of Minnetonka. I am the Community Development Director. I'm also on the Legislative Committee for EDAM, so I'm happy to be here. And I just want to share a short story about businesses that I work with, particularly one business called Water Dog Works. And you'll probably wonder what that business is all about. But the name, the dog portion of the name, stands for Dissolved Oxygen Generator. And really, it's a patented technology that removes iron and minerals from water. So it's a business startup company that's based in Minnetonka. They employ about 12 people, and they've been having a hard time finding investors. And so it's companies like this that I think this legislation could help support. The investors are nervous. It's kind of a risky investment, and we think this takes part of the risk out of that investing. So on behalf of EDAM Legislative Committee and also the City of Minnetonka, I would support you in your efforts to adopt this legislation.
If that company would call me, I probably would be willing to do a clinical trial up on Lake Vermilion.
Absolutely.
I have an iron problem in my water. I'm trying
to
avoid an iron filter.
Rural areas. Rural areas is their market.
Your fixture is all rusty.
Good morning, Chairman Bach. Amy Baldwin with the City of Brooklyn Park, also representing the Economic Development Association. I'll keep my comments brief in recognition of our time today and just express our support both from the City and the Economic Development Association for this bill.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, I'll wait till after the testimony. I just had a few words to add to the to one of these paragraphs.
Senator Saltzman, I thought you had an engagement outside the building.
I do. I have to be at 3:00.
At what time?
Now. But I have Representative Mahoney speaking for a while, and I'm sure he loves being up on the front podium by himself. So I will take the legacy. But if we – I do – We do have 2306 as well. I'd like to at least be able to get started before I leave.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jean Spaulding, and I'm with the KDI County and City of Wilmer Economic Development Commission, and I am here just to support the bill as well. We have, in 2005, the state of Minnesota sold the Wilmer Regional Treatment Center to a private developer or a private company that is now operating it as Midwest Technology Campus, and to date, we have 19 companies that are on the campus. They've invested about $11 million into the campus in refurbishing buildings, and we have approximately 250 employees on the campus with that project. As I work with them and businesses as prospects for that particular project, we see that as one of the shining stars for West Central Minnesota in job creation. We see that we need to create an angel network system in our county. And so last summer we started creating and building a template for KDI County Angel Network. And what we found is that we're having difficulties, or we have not in past, this isn't the first time that's been tried, and we have not been able to accomplish that to date. We are trying again because we feel that this is important to our being successful in working with startup companies in particular that might be a perfect fit for the campus. In our meeting last January, we did have a company that presented to a potential group of investors. And what's exciting about this particular company, it is a Minnesota technology that is not a new technology, but they have taken a new platform for an existing technology in ag business. And it would be a device company that would have manufacturing potential. And this is a company that we don't have to lose to another locale. They are Minnesota homegrown, and this would be a perfect fit for this type of an example of a perfect fit for this legislation.
Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Chair, my name is Noel Labine. I'm a president of the Minnesota Association of Professional County Economic Developers, or MAPSED. I'm also speaking on behalf of EDAM on their legislative committee. And we are 100% behind this effort to create more jobs in Minnesota, and we support this bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A7 amendment as amended.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of words with Senator Salzman's consent. We discussed this earlier. So on line 3.15, we could insert before the comma after the word efficiency, the words and conservation. So read energy, efficiency, and conservation. Mr. Chair, that's just because those two words kind of capture the totality of that idea. They're slightly different from each other. And then, I don't know, somewhere we also need to insert the word chemistry, just the word chemistry in that list of qualified high technology field. The idea there, Mr. Chair, we've discussed this in several other committees. We're trying to get to the idea of green chemistry, but apparently that adjective puts us a little farther away from the other chamber, the other body. So we're trying to bring in, you know, folks who are involved in green chemistry, which brings down the level of toxicity in manufacturing processes or end products. Chemistry is inclusive of green chemistry, of course. So if we can just stick chemistry in there. So the words and conservation as a part of efficiency, and then chemistry as a separate field.
And Council, what would the Dibble oral amendment be?
On line 15, after efficiency, insert and conservation. On line 18, before veterinary science, insert chemistry, comma.
Senator Dibble, is that the intent?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble moves the oral amendment. Senator Saltzman, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Skoy.
I move the have we adopted the A7 amendment?
No, the A7 as amended. Senator Skoy moves the A7 as amended. Any questions? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Chair lays Senate file 2307 over for possible inclusion, either in the omnibus bill or the jobs bill. I guess we're not sure at this point, but we'll be having discussions with the House about that. Senator Saltzman.
There. I now have Senate file number 2306. Mr. Chair, I'd like to give a brief intro and then have Ms. Allen walk through the bill.
to just kind of go through this. This is this really complements the Angel Bill. And as we've talked about, as different technologies move through the entire commercialization process, they need different access to different kind of funding. And certainly the angel investor is for those smaller seed capital needs. But as a company grows and as we have a broader need, this particular file, which is called the Minnesota Small Business Investment Company Credit, really taps investments made by insurance companies. And insurance companies now invest their premiums in many different things, but this is giving them an incentive to invest in small companies in Minnesota. It is not as limited as the angel investor bill, so it has broader use, but it's still smaller companies and creates much-needed capital and a larger pool of capital. This bill also came through this committee last year, and we have worked over the interim to address some of the concerns that have been brought forward. It is sometimes known as the CAPCO bill, and CAPCO has been around for a number of years, as we've discussed, and as it started out, it needed work, it needed improvements, and this bill, as it's written, addresses many of those improvements, many of those questions that have come up. Again, other states have used this program. They have improved it, and they have expanded it. And again, Wisconsin, some of their most promising companies have started under this particular program. So Mr. Cassidy is here, and I would like to be excused, Mr. Chair, so I can go talk about growing jobs out in the East Metro with some folks. But I really appreciate you hearing this bill and also considering it, because I think it, again, is as we look to grow jobs and we look at all these opportunities in this particular market, we could have the best ideas in the world, and we have wonderful things happening here in this state. But if we can't leverage the dollars and incentivize investment in those companies, they will go elsewhere. And so all the work we've done to create this climate of innovation is all for naught if we can't encourage these companies to put their roots down here. So thank you very much. And and if there are questions before I leave, I'd be happy to take them.
Senator Saltzman, before you leave, I just want to publicly acknowledge and thank you for all the work you put into this bill and into the Angel Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Over the course of the summer and the fall, I know you've put a lot of effort into it, so...
I want to
thank you for all of that.
Thank you very much. And to everyone on this committee, you know, for hearing these bills and all the people who are behind us in all these efforts, it was really a team effort, so thank you.
Thank you. I don't know what's causing that, but somebody will find out, I would think.
It's a cell phone.
Who would like? Mr. Cassidy, welcome to the committee.
Chairman Bach, members, my name is Paul Cassidy. I'm with the law firm of Leonard Street & Diner, and we represent a coalition of investment firms that includes Enhanced Capital. I have with me today Ms. Gingy Prince, who's part of Enhanced Capital, and also Advantage Capital, I think, has been before this committee in the past. I think Senator Saltzman's crystallized the need for this pretty clearly, as well as the previous testifiers on the Angel Tax Credit Bill. Since the dot-com bust in 2000, the capital markets for small venture capital has really dried up. And in particular, in Minnesota, where they characterize us as flyover land, it's become an even increasingly big problem. The report I'd like to address right up front for Senator Marty that came out of the House Research Department, I think one thing that needs to be pointed out is that we do attract venture capital in Minnesota. We have a medical device industry here that's one of the best in the country, obviously. Makes the headlines every day in the newspaper. But I think what's important to point out is that medical device industry attracts big venture capital. And we're talking everything north of $5 million, $5 million to $30 million. You'll see the deals that will show up in the headlines of the paper. What we're talking about here when we're talking about the Angel Bill and the Small Business Investment Act is companies that are in need of investments from anywhere from $250,000 up to $3 million. That's where this bill fits that niche. That capital does not exist in the marketplace right now, and that's what this program tries to address. This program has been adopted in 12 states now, reauthorized 28 different times by legislatures around the country. Currently, it's under consideration, I believe, in Virginia, Wyoming, and Maryland, Wyoming just passed this bill as well. Virginia, it's an initiative of the governor. I believe in Mississippi, it's also an initiative of the governor. This administration has had this as part of their package for the last 2 years. But to to just get into this a little bit more before council talks about the bill. The basic premise of this bill is, how do you leverage capital? We need to unlock capital. I think Senator Chairman Bach has a bill tomorrow, which that's what that bill is all about, unlocking capital in the Minnesota marketplace. This goes where the capital is, and that is with insurance companies. Insurance companies have reserves that they have to sit on and that they have to invest. Why not provide them an incentive to invest that money here? The bill before you is basically allots $100 million in tax credits to insurers that they can take to offset their premium tax obligation in the state of Minnesota. Those tax credits don't hit the state budget for 4 years, so the capital that is raised goes to work right away. Investment managers, including Ms. Prince's company, get out on the street. They find the companies that need this capital and put the money to work right away, so we get people back to work and we start generating revenues for the state's treasury. With that, Mr. Chair, I will stand for questions, and if there's anything I need assistance with, Ms. Prince is here to help. Thank you.
We'll have council walk through, and members, I know we've seen this bill before, but we'll have council walk through what's in here for us.
Mr. Chair, the bill is essentially the same as it came out of finance. It is the same as it came out of finance, and essentially the same as when it went into finance. The first subdivision is basically the list of definitions, including who can invest and what sort of businesses, starting on page 2, line 18, that they can invest in. And the company has to be less than 100 employees, and then there's exclusion of certain kinds of businesses that cannot be invested in for purposes of the credit. On page 3, we have definition of qualified debt instruments and qualified distributions that allows these business investment companies that it allows them to take certain fees. This is a change. There are some changes in this than to last year's bill. It limits the amount of fees that they are allowed to take, which wasn't in last year's bill. Then there's further definitions of investments. Starting on page 4 on subdivision 2, it describes the lengthy process of certification and what a business investment company will have to go through in order to be certified by deed, including paying an application fee of $7,500. On page 5, subdivision 3, those are the requirements for the investor, and that limits the investor's participation in the company so that someone isn't getting a credit for a company that they essentially own. Subdivision 4 is the aggregate limit of credits, and this allows up to $100 million of credits over the course of the credit period. And then page 6 goes through a detailed application process as to how the department can allocate the credits, pretty much on a first-come, first-served basis, and how to apportion them on a pro rata basis if there are applications on the same date and time. Then starting on page 7, subdivision 5, are the requirements for continuance of certification. And this gives a designated schedule of the level of investment that must occur within the time from the initial investment period. Within 2 years of the allocation of the credit, the investment company has to invest at least 35%, and then within 3 years, it has to be 50%. And then down in paragraph D, you see that if within 4 years after the allocation they have not invested 60%, they are not permitted the management fees that are discussed earlier. Then starting on page 8, subdivision 6, it requires these investment companies to make annual reports about the capital that they have invested, to whom they've invested it, and whether or not they're meeting the requirements of certification. Subdivision 7 on page 9 deals with the distributions. And there, if you will note here, starting on line 24, this is an addition to the bill from last year that gives the state the opportunity to receive profits back from the qualified investments. Subdivision 8 deals with decertification and what could cause that and the process for the department to take basically decertify the company so that they cannot receive their continued credits. Subdivision 11 on page 10 deals with a report to the governor and the legislature from DEED basically on the effectiveness of these credits and to what sort of companies and in what amounts. Starting on page 11, section 2 is the tax credit section so that the companies are allowed a credit against their premium tax liability. It's not an income tax credit like the previous angel credit bill. And that's more or less the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Council. Questions, members? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was just reading the revenue note, and there's this paragraph about retaliatory taxation by other states. Council, can you explain what that's about? What is that all about?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, retaliatory taxation deals only with insurance premium tax. As it says here in the revenue notes, you'll see that there's five different states that are subject to this. And the insurance company that are domiciled in these states that pay tax, that have policies here in Minnesota, are subject to additional taxes in that state. And so as it relates to this bill, it's basically exempting them that if it's going to create an additional retaliatory tax, that they would not be responsible for any further Minnesota tax. We don't have the ability to affect what the other states charge in the taxes.
I think the issue is if we pass some tax provisions that create companies that aren't domiciled in Minnesota to make them uncompetitive in our state, that other states can retaliate against Minnesota companies doing business in their state. So I think it's just a field leveler. And so I think the language is intended to make sure that those kind of conditions don't exist relative to the passage of this bill.
Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, it's the retaliatory taxing is something that most people would say is blatantly unconstitutional except for a Supreme Court ruling 100 years ago or so that allows, in effect, if we have a higher insurance tax rate here than in, say, Wisconsin, then Wisconsin will add that higher amount to Minnesota
businesses
when they're dealing in Wisconsin.
Right.
And so, in effect, it's most states, they cut their taxes because then we are told we will punish you for having a higher tax rate by doing it. And I suggested the way we ought to do that is retaliate against retaliatory tax, which by the same logic would work and it would stop the practice. But Department of Revenue was interested in it several years ago, but I didn't pursue it. But it's irrelevant. It's not part of this bill. I mean, this is totally separate thing. It's just they're exempting them from that retaliatory tax.
So, I understand. So, Mr. Chair, so we don't inhibit the ability of insurance companies from New York, for example, making these kinds of investments in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. So that it isn't affecting out-of-state companies from taking these credits and increasing their retaliatory tax.
Senator Dibble.
Sure. I just on another subject, I was looking at the program evaluation language. But it's kind of like the program evaluation language from 2307. I know Senator Salzman's not here, where an external evaluator would be engaged to validate the positive effect on our economy. So I'll just offer that as a suggestion as the bill moves forward, that maybe we can mirror how the program evaluation is constructed for the Angel Investor Program.
By a third party.
Exactly.
Mr. Cassidy, what's your thought on that?
Chairman Bach, that would be fine with us. We've done that in other states. I think the assumption here in the reporting to the legislature is that those numbers at some point probably would get looked at very closely, if not audited.
Well, Mr.
Senator Dibble.
Took a lot of effort to get to the bottom of Job Z and its benefits contrasted with its expenditures. And that was, we relied heavily on internal reporting in that case, and our legislative auditor had to do a lot of work to really suss out what the truth was. And so just reflecting on that multi-year experience so we don't have to repeat that.
That's a good point. I will express that to Senator Saltzman. Anybody else? Mr. Cassidy, anything further?
Mr. Chairman.
Would anybody else like to testify on the bill? Mr. Cassidy, thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. Sorry I didn't sign up. I didn't know if I could be in the room at this concise moment, and I'm glad I could. I just wanted to say we support this bill. We think of the various ones that we're seeing, it's going to possibly help more small businesses. What comes to mind with the NFIB membership are manufacturers who are trying to grow, people with 20, 30, 40, 50 employees trying to get to that next level. And from our perspective, there's a lot of things we need to do in this state to improve our investment climate. I know it's going to be extremely difficult or impossible with the financial projections we're seeing for the future. So I think, you know, we do need to look at these kind of credits that are more modest, and appreciate the fact that that you guys are looking at this and hopefully are going to pass it.
Mr. Hickey, thank you. Anything else, members? Chair lays over Senate File 2306 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Senator Olson here.
Senator Bach, you just went up to check in the committee.
Oh, can we?
For tomorrow?
She should be up at 1 Paul Education Grove. Is anybody from Wayzata here?
She can. Senator.
Oh, there she is. There she is.
Yes, they are here.
Senator Olson, sorry it took us so long to get to you.
That's all right.
Senate File 3291. Senator Olson, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joining me at the table are, I'm out of breath there, Al Orson, who's the city manager of Wayzata, and John Merkins, who is with the Senior Housing Partners. The Senate File 3291 is a tax increment financing bill. It's a redevelopment district that's working for an approved project that got caught in the vagaries of our economic system at this time. Wayzata started about 10 years ago with a developer that was pursuing redevelopment of a shopping center area, and I think they've been, this is about the third developer along the way that has finally been able to reach an accord with the city in terms of what would fit with the city, the land, and the objectives of the area for redevelopment. And the tax increment district is in place, but there are some barriers to the financing going forward, given the economic conditions. And so we respectfully request that your consideration of this proposal, that I will ask Mr. Orson, city manager, to just describe. And if there are questions of Mr. Merkins, he's available.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and committee, Al Orson, city manager, city of Wayzata. As Senator Olson described, this is basically three amendments that would extend the first receipt because the project has not started, and would extend the five-year rule, and then also deal with the part with the various parcels that and buildings that were specifically a gas station that helped us meet the blight study, and that has been removed in anticipation of the start of the project. So the city is requesting this primarily to reset the time clock on the TIF district so that when the first increment starts, it'll be a larger increment. We'll provide some funding to hopefully move this project forward faster and create jobs and get everything moving on a more fast pace.
And Mr. Orson, when was the district created?
In 2009.
maybe it's...
What date in 2009?
Oh.
By how many days? Because we actually made a blanket extension.
Yes.
Up through April 20th of 2009. So I assume the district was created after that?
Correct. I believe it was actually created in June or July.
I understand now. And our plans for the project coming? And I imagine they're slower than you anticipated.
Slower than we anticipated. One of the first major steps is moving a road, and we're at that particular element of the project is underway, has been bid and awarded, and will be starting construction probably in May.
And Mr. Orson, why did you pick 9 years instead of 10?
There a reason?
That's the first we see.
No particular reason.
A little bit different. This was the 5-year to be extended.
Okay. I guess that's old. I'm sorry. That was a little different issue than what I was thinking it was. But
John Merkins with Presbyterian Homes. This is a project that we've been working on with the city for now up to close to 3 years. It is an exciting project. Has a very dynamic group of activities of mixed use, including retail, office, our senior housing in particular, of course, that we're interested in, a hotel, and non-senior housing as well. We've got caught up in the challenges of the economic environment that we are all living in right now. Currently, the most challenging part of moving this forward is the financial aspects of securing capital to start the project, and by enhancing the TIF package, or if, in fact, in this case, taking advantage of the TIF package we originally assumed we would have based on when the district was formed, we're hoping to strengthen our position with potential financing opportunities.
How big a project is it, the total?
It's about 850,000 square feet of finished square footage. The total project from a cost basis is about $160 million. Value at the end of the day is expected to be $225 million. Big project.
And has anything started?
We have been diligently working through closure of the mall. We're working all the way through all of the current leasehold tenants, and we're down to one single tenant remaining that has leasehold interest. So that's a significant undertaking to get to a point where we can start the project. The project is actually phased, so if that tenant chooses to stay there, we can accommodate that. So we're in a position to start as soon as the financing world allows us and capital is available at the table. We're through all the city entitlement process.
Any questions? Senator Olson, anything further?
No, we would appreciate your consideration. I think this is important to the area, and it's a challenge when, you know, if the financing isn't available, that value that we talk about in enhancing doesn't accrue. It doesn't come about, so.
Senator Olson, I'll have a discussion with the other body on how many of the TIF proposals are actually planning to put in the jobs bill. And so this could run sooner than the omnibus bill.
Mm-hmm. That'd be nice.
But if not in the jobs bill, we'll find a way to get it included in the omnibus tax bill. Anything further to add, Mr. Olson?
Thank you.
Charlie's over Senate File 3291.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. Anything else, members? We're meeting tentatively, I think. I think we've sent the notice out for 9 o'clock tomorrow. So, committee adjourned.